Okay, hello, welcome to Freebooters. So full disclosure, we did about what 30 seconds of stuff before I realizing that my microphone wasn't on. And do I say the exact same stuff and pretend it's a real conversation?
Always weird, right? And you were so much more enthusiastic the first time.
Yeah.
First time was like, hello, welcome. The second time was like, hello,
Hello, is it
welcome.
working this time?
Is it working?
God, I hope so. So, what we were talking about just before we came on was you've got a personal project which is quite interesting, where you are making basically a television channel, a pirate television track channel. Thus,
Well, no, all of the TV shows I have downloaded were sourced ethically and organically. And I'm not broadcasting outside my network. So they're only for me to watch. So it's kind of inspired. Over the last year or so, I've watched a couple of YouTube videos where somebody set up, like, the first one I watched was they made a little Raspberry Pi enclosure that looked like an old TV, and then they had a local streaming thing that mimicked old-fashioned TV. But they're often and then another one later where they did a similar thing, but he actually set up a local broadcast, an illegal broadcast, so
Oh,
he's
wow.
broadcasting to his neighborhood. But they do all the they try and make it look like 80s TV. They'll put like effects on to imitate like scan lines and do like the old style bumper videos and stuff like that, because they're trying to emulate like the feel. They have nostalgia for the feel, which I mean I do, because I lived through that period, but that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in, because I've got a bunch of TV shows down. I don't have a ton, but a bunch of TV shows downloaded. Everybody does probably. All of which I enjoy. They're all my comfort. They're not like the best TV shows I've made. They're my comfort TV shows. But I can never pick which one in particular to watch. And I miss the days of TV where you just stick something on. And if you like it, you watch it. If you don't, you switch it off. Maybe you look in the paper. Oh, such and such is on at such and such a time. I'll remember to tune in for that. And sometimes you remember, sometimes you forget. Sometimes you come in halfway through something and you watch it anyway. And I miss that. I miss not having the choice. I miss
Because
just
let's be
putting something
honest,
on.
Deal or No Deal would never have taken off on a streaming platform. There's
No.
so much that wouldn't.
Deal or No Deal, I think, was entertaining the first like three or four times you watched it. It was a fun idea, but then it just always played out exactly the same. It was a problem with that. So I've set up this streaming thing. I'm using a thing called so I tried to just use FFmpeg RAW, and it's frustrating actually. This seems like something. So I've got a bunch of video files, TV shows. Hang on, tractor's gonna go past.
So many tractors this time of year.
It's tractor season, yeah. I think they're migrating.
God, getting stuck behind one on a bus is like it's like probably how it feels when a car is stuck behind a bus.
That's a bit the old woman who ate the spider. A bunch of TV shows downloaded, all in different formats, different codecs, different resolutions, and FFmpeg really doesn't like that. If you want to do this with FFmpeg, you really need to put everything in this same codec, same resolution. Otherwise, something will break with FFmpeg. I almost had it working, and then HEVC videos broke it. So I ended up finding a thing called Liquid Soap,
Now
which
you've
seems to be
mentioned this,
like pro-grade software for running like radio type streams, and it just sort of additionally does video. But you can do like TV things, like you can have a playlist, you can insert videos, you can do bumpers, you can do overlays. I don't know how to do any of that yet. It's essentially it's a language. It's an executable and a scripting language that allows you to script a stream, and you can pull in all kinds of, you do crazy stuff that I don't understand yet. I've just cobbled together from copying and pasting examples, a working config. I'm yet to sort of explore the capabilities of Liquid Soap, but I have a little bumper video that plays between one show ends and then the bumper video plays, and it's got a little like upcoming next and tells you what's going to play next,
But only the
which is
one.
cool. What do you mean, only the one?
Have you made several bumper videos, or are you just
No, just one bumper video. Yeah, I mean, because again, I'm not really trying to emulate the form, just the practical. I mean, you can go that way and do all the other stuff. So and it's one of the bits that I found tricky for a while, because I wanted a playlist. So these are all just same as anybody who's got TV shows on a hard drive. They're just in folders named whatever the source was on your, I don't, you know, I don't make them regularly named or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, using Find, it was easy enough to find the video files. And yeah. I wanted to, and then I isolate the, I make sure they've all got like SEO1, SO1, EO1
mm-hmm.
type thing. It's somewhere in the file name. So I order them by that. But then the problem is you get all the Star Treks in a row.
Because
what I wanted to do is I wanted to play episode one of everything, episode two, not just a random episode. I wanted it to progress over time so you can tune in and watch the next episode of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That foxed me for a bit, but that turned out to be very easy. But then, yeah, I didn't want all the Star Treks in a row. If just by default, it would be, you know, I'd sort by the episodes, but then it's alphabetical.
Why is Star Trek at the top?
Well, no, it's just alphabetically. Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, they're just all going to play in a row.
But not like a series beginning with A?
It's not first, they're just in a row.
Right, okay. I got
so
you.
You'll watch whatever, and then there'll be 7 hours of Star Trek, which I didn't really want. So yeah, I had to shuffle them within that. So I've got a script. I've got the Liquid script running through Liquid Soap, which... first of all, I've got a bash script which generates the playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a list of all the file names.
And you then use that with Find.
Find said the usual, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Then the Liquid Soap script loads in that playlist, adds the bumper video between every videos, and sorts out all the resolution stuff and that.
Mm-hmm.
That streams to something called Media MTX, which is the thing that broadcasts it out over RTMP. And then I've got a script for doing the schedule. So I've got a schedule that shows what's playing now and the next 20 items and what time they'll start.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit fiddly. I used I'm using FF Probe to just pull the lengths of all the... I could probably do this in Liquid Soap, but I'm using FF Probe to pull all the lengths of all the shows and then just adding it on. Did you know the date command can just add time on? You can do date-d, put in a date, and then go... plus this many seconds or plus this many days, and it will give you...
Oh, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. That's the kind of thing that date can do.
Yeah,
date's great. There's a lot to it. One
annoying thing about it is it will only accept... doing maths on dates, it will only accept... like keywords like now or today or tomorrow.
Yeah.
But in terms of like an actual date, it will only accept one format, and it's not the format that it outputs by default, which is very irritating. I don't know why that is.
What format does it accept? Is it...
Like 2026-month-day, then hours, minutes, seconds, and then time zone, something like that.
Oh, that one. That's...
standard, one of the ISO, I think it's like that.
Yeah. If you output date, and then is it percentage Z? That's the one that it gives you, is it?
Percentage Z, I think that just gives you the time zone, doesn't it?
Oh, that might be just the time zone.
Thing. Oh, that's the time. Lowercase z is the time difference.
Okay.
Uppercase z is the time zone, yeah.
There's one that gives you the lot, the standard, a jumble that's the standard. I forget what it is now. I use it in Plock because I think it's Plock or Agriblop or both. Basically, if it's generating a page through a systemd service, it will, it's just going to have, it has a little comment in the HTML to say when it was generated so that you know if a page is being generated, even if there's no update, as it were.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's the format that it will accept for the math. But yeah, anyway, it's all working now. All seems to be working great. It's been up for a few days. I've been tuning in. I mean, I think I said this off air, didn't I? So it's like nice to... like sometimes I'll stick it on and be like, oh, I'm not in the mood for watching that. And then I'll look at the schedule and then I'll be like, oh, such and such is on at 10:30. I'll try and remember to watch that. And then I either will or won't.
So this is your personal rotation, right?
Yeah. It's just, like I said, it's not the best shows. It's not the TV shows that I consider the best TV shows. It's the ones I can rewatch and, you know, the comfort shows.
I see The Simpsons on there twice.
Really?
Do I?
Oh, on the schedule?
Yeah. Today,
So season one, episode four, and then season one, episode five later. Yeah,
So is what's the order? So is it not just going through a rotation? Is it going through?
No, then I would have, yeah, okay, if I did that, I'd have all the Star Treks in a row. So it's kind of each rotation is randomized.
That's randomized. Oh, okay.
But always playing, you know, season one, episode one of everything, then season one, episode two of everything.
But then the Simpsons are only, what, they're five things apart?
Yeah, well, when it loops round, Simpsons could be first in the next one. It could be last in the first rotation, and then next
right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Interesting.
I'd like it to, if I got a bit more sophisticated with it, I could have like a steady schedule that doesn't have all the Star Treks in a row. But I'd have to get I'd have to get a bit complicated with that.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to, because I mentioned to you like so this playlist is currently about 3 months long. Mm-hmm. And for the last day, it's all Simpsons and King of the Hill, because they're the ones with the most, seasons. So it'd be nice to interleave, to not, if I could make the script more complex, not start some things till later.
Yeah.
So that at the end, it's still a mixture of things. That'd be cool. But I'm currently just using a find command with a couple of said bits, and then it would get a lot more complicated with that. And it's fine. It's good enough.
Yeah. I mean, do you think you could get in a spot where it's fully automated?
How do you mean?
Well, as in terms of like it will just keep generating an ongoing schedule and an ongoing roster.
Well, I mean the schedule is all of my media, all of my TV shows, so it's already everything.
Oh, so it's not just a selection of your comfort shows or anything?
No. The schedule in the browser is just the next 20 things, but the actual playlist is like three odd thousand things long.
Okay.
That's already set, essentially. And when it gets to the end, it'll just go to the beginning.
Right, okay. But it's all things starting at the moment. Have you ever thought about doing a further, like a week ahead in your schedule?
How do you mean?
Well, TV guys are about a week ahead, not a day.
Yeah. Okay. So the problem with that, so my script that makes the schedule, because, like I say, my files aren't regularly named, so I can't reliably pull the episode title out of the I mean, I could go through them all and rationalize them, but I can't be honest. Mm-hmm. So I'm pulling the episode names from an online API.
Oh, okay.
So if the schedule is too many, if the schedule has too many, and it's every time the episode changes, it's pulling those episode names.
Right. Okay.
At 14:03, when it changes from Superstore to Deep Space Nine, it will pull out all the episode names for the schedule. So if I have too many items, the API won't like.
Oh, okay. And is there not a way to do like an FF probe on the metadata for the?
It's very rarely filled in correctly.
Right. Okay. So yeah, because on Jellyfin.
What I should really do is rationalize the file names. I know there are programs that can do that.
Maybe do it in a script. Maybe.
Yeah, but for all the TV shows, they're all named differently. There are programs that can loop through and rationalize everything, but I don't really want. I kind of like it being a bit eclectic, honest.
Yeah, yeah. One note is that I've seen here. Have you made a conscious effort to include the seconds in the schedule? Because that's another thing that you don't get on TV schedules. You don't get the second.
Yeah. I mean, on TV, they tend to start on the minute, like, or at least they try to, right?
Whereas could just give them a minute before so they've got a little bit of time to set down.
Yeah, I mean, I get the seconds from FFM Probe, so I might as well put it exactly.
Yeah.
Also, it was handy when I was checking it was working.
Yeah.
I might start omitting it, but yeah, when I was checking it was working, it was a handy thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, yeah. But it's nice. It's nice. And what styling have you used for the TV guide? You've just used. So you're doing it in a table.
Actually, yeah. I stole your. I just copied and pasted from your site the thing to put it in the center.
The thing to put it in the center?
Yeah. The CSS to put it in the center.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So nice. Yeah. I just copied and pasted your code. I made it a bit wider, but yeah.
It's just styling the body tag.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, very.
Also, I discovered, I didn't know this. You can, so if you view source on it, because obviously the schedule when the TV show changes, as in when the playlist goes to the next item, that triggers the regeneration of the schedule. But obviously, that's not going to make it reload in a browser.
Hmm.
So I've put in a header tag to make it reload every 10 seconds. I didn't know you could do that. I thought you can only do that with JavaScript.
Sorry, say that again. A header tag to
In the HTML, there's a header tag to make it reload every...
Oh, yeah, so there is.
Which I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, that's interesting.
Or maybe I might have forgotten that was a thing. Maybe we used to do that back in the early 2000s.
Do you want me to point out a little typo?
Yeah.
In your table heading, where it says now playing, you've not correctly closed the strong tag.
I've opened it again.
Yeah, you double opened it.
Double opened it. I'll fix that now.
But okay, I like that. And you've done the, what have you done? You've done a nice little, was it border bottom?
Yeah,
border bottom dark gray on the, yeah.
Okay, that bug is fixed.
Hooray. I'll wait 10 seconds now to...
I'm going to wait for the episode to change.
Oh, you got to wait for the episode to change?
Yeah. It won't regenerate the schedule until the episode.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
Which is in 1 minute, so it won't be long.
Oh, wonderful. That's, yeah. Oh, well, that's nice. Yeah, no, it does remind me when Hex did the radio thing for a bit, didn't he? Where he just had... and then had old episodes of Trendy Talk on, which I quite enjoyed. But I honestly, in today's day and age, like it does feel a bit antiquated, doesn't it? Just a little bit.
I'm enjoying it with the TV, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
like it's more satisfying. I'm watching a bit less YouTube and a bit more of this.
Well, that's okay.
Because it's nice to be surprised. I mean, yeah. It's only a tiny surprise because it's from a limited selection, but you know. I wouldn't have chosen to watch this, and then you get into it, and you know.
Cool. Have you look forward to the next episode? Have you considered getting a TV?
but now I'd have to watch present day TV.
I don't know what present day TV's like, to be honest.
I was looking for a new show to watch yesterday. I was looking on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
If you just go on Rotten Tomatoes and go by like the top rated shows, it's 30% police procedural, which is it always has been.
Yeah.
But the rest is just absolute fucking slop.
What is it? Okay.
Bottom of the barrel sitcoms and reality stuff.
Rotten Tomatoes. What was the criteria that you're looking at?
Rotten Tomatoes is a really awkward site, so let me get to
the TV shows. Most popular on RT? What does RT mean?
Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, okay. Right, okay.
Best TV shows, and then... Yeah, sort of my most popular.
Okay. Yeah, most popular, best TV shows, July 2026. Stuart fails to save the universe. Oh,
that's not come up for me. I don't know what that is either.
We had a talk about Stuart failed to save the universe. It's the Big Bang Theory spin-off. You love those.
Oh, yeah. We've got to at least watch some of that for a thingy.
For a Space Virgins, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, honestly, I hate the Big Bang Theory, but this might be.
Yeah, well, I hated the Big Bang Theory. Used to really take the piss out of my sister for watching it and stuff like that. And then I hate watched it one time. And by the time I got to the end of it, I'd grown like affection for the characters and stuff. So I still hated it, but I had a fondness for the characters. And then I watched it a second time, and I thought it sucked me in, and I actually like it now.
Yeah. Oh man,
it's not as bad. Oh, I know this is a topic we come back to all the time. It's not as bad as people say it is. It really isn't.
It is quite bad.
It's no worse than sitcom du jour, mainstream sitcom du jour of the day. I know that's of the day twice, but
even that car outside disagrees with you.
No, that was a yes beep.
I don't know. Frasier's better.
I rewatched. Temma was mentioning Frasier the other day, and I was like,
yep,
I never really talked to Frasier back in the day. I'm going to give it a watch, and it's not very good.
It's good.
It's not very good. It's irritating because every episode is Frasier learning the lesson that he shouldn't be snobbish.
Yeah,
and then reset, which I know is a sitcom thing. But when you're explicitly learning like a personal growth lesson, you can't just fucking. You can't do that every time, and that's not fun.
It's a good show.
The character of Frasier is enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it's fairly smartly written for a sitcom. It's trying to present itself as more smartly written than it
mid-brow.
Actually is. Mid-brow, yes. But it is quite smartly written. But a lot of the jokes are bad. And then it is the same. The foundation that the foundation that the humor relies on is him going through that journey every episode, virtually, of being snobby, realizing he shouldn't be, learning a lesson. And you can't keep fucking doing that for however many seasons it went on for. I got about five episodes deep, and I was like, this is just the same fucking jokes every episode.
I mean, you also got to bear in mind, first of all, that's also the case for Big Bang Theory. But also,
no.
Yes.
And no, Big Bang Theory, for a sitcom, has a remarkable amount of like actual character growth and story progression. It doesn't do the reset thing.
No, it doesn't do the reset thing, but the jokes are all, they're young nerds. They're not good with women.
Well, no, because they all get girlfriends. They all end up in success.
Yeah, I know. The whole show underwrites its own premise. It's crazy.
No, it is mostly bad. I mean, when I say it's no worse than sitcom du jour, that doesn't mean it's good, because sitcom du jour is usually bad. But so most of it is bad. But I think Sheldon is the actual interesting character. I know and the show sort of misunderstands itself, and he's the one you're supposed to be laughing at and not sympathizing with. But half the time I'm sympathizing with him. And his relationship to Penny is the interesting relationship, and that's what they should have centralized but didn't. The episodes where that is central are by far the best episodes. It's better than
I don't know.
I've become a Big Bang Theory apologist. The more I watch it, the more I become that.
I mean, at the moment, me and Rosie are getting through King of the Hill, and obviously, unapologetically, one of the best animated sitcoms ever made.
Yeah,
so
one of the best sitcoms.
I can't pick a fight over that, to be honest. It still holds up.
I will argue with King of the Hill. The latter seasons, it goes a bit wacky, and it's worse for it. The more grounded it is, and the more everyday it is, the better it is. By far, the stronger it is. The wackier it gets, the less connected to its base. You know, its base structure. It is the less good it is.
Yeah, animated sitcoms have a problem with that, don't they? They don't. They run out of jokes.
Sitcoms in general, when they run too long, it's like, I think the writers are just like, I want to get out of this situation. I want to write outside of it, and it's like, which I understand that as a motivation, but that's not. That's not the thing you're enjoying. Yeah. It's not its strength.
I mean, that's the
Office, they do it with Parks and Rec. I think any sitcom that runs long enough, they end up doing it. Community.
It ruined Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec would have been a masterpiece if they let it run for only a couple of seasons.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the thing.
And Parks and Rec's biggest flaw for me is the last few seasons, it just gets overly sentimental.
Yeah, it craps itself so bad.
At its best, that sitcom is a nice balance of cynical and sentimental. It balances them perfectly. But when it tilts too far one way or the other, which is why I don't like the British Office, that leans too cynical, as opposed to the American Office, which balances it with sentimentality, because, you know, it's the American.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. The British Office is just too... It's beating you into the ground with its cynicism, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also it's very one joke.
Yeah, it's just awkward situation.
More so than the American. It's just David Brent is awkward.
Yeah. I saw Derek, which I didn't hate. And that's the other Ricky Gervais sitcom where he's a simple person who works in a care home.
Okay.
And that one had me in. That had a bit more sentimentality in it, interestingly enough. Was a lot less cynical.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And Carl Pilkington plays the janitor in it for a first season or something, which I think is quite good. I'm not gonna say it's like go out and watch it now or anything like that, but if you're looking for
if you like that kind of thing, watch it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it does bring in more genuine sentimentality. And because also I think another Ricky Gervais sitcom that goes the other way into too goofy is Life's Too Short, or Life Is Short, with Warwick Davis.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, right. Yeah, I think I've seen clips of that. And that feels very BBC Saturday evening sitcom.
Like, yeah. Well, it's all. I mean, it's obviously it's all short jokes. It's all.
Yeah.
And it is just a bit goofy, really. You know, it's.
I really struggle with British comedy. I find British comedy. I don't think we're good at comedy. I think we're good at bants.
Yeah,
we're good at you know, yeah, banter.
Because we've got some great panel shows out there.
Yeah, panel shows we're very good at. But actual written comedy, I think we're lacking that Mediterranean, actual acerbic, cynical, satirical kind of humour.
I mean, what would the top 10 British sitcoms be? Can you do that on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't think there's a British sitcom. I like Keeping Up Appearances.
Yeah,
bland. But it's semi-ironic. It's not entirely ironic, but it's... And I don't think there's really... Oh, the one about the working class people in the 90s, I think.
Only Fools and Horses.
No. Good. The Royal Family. I enjoyed that at the time.
I found it too, like, derivative. And like based on so much other stuff on TV, you know, and so much like it was a lot of the jokes, good ones as they were all hooked into the time. It's all referential humor. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I think it was because it was a sitcom that wasn't the dialogue was very naturalistic. It wasn't set up joke for the audience. Mm-hmm. It was things that people could plausibly say to each other in a conversation, and it was a genuine sitcom. The humor came from their situation more than set up punchline.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're right that because I'm scanning through these sitcoms, top 50 British sitcoms, and there's some good ones in there, but like I don't think.
Are the good ones? I mean, I think I'm particularly hostile to British sitcoms. Like, I really don't like them.
Okay,
number one's going to be Fawlty Towers, right?
It's Only Fools and Horses, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, fuck me. But Fawlty Towers is bleakly on fire.
Fawlty Towers is episode 5. I liked it when it was on. I haven't rewatched it in a while. When I say when it was on, I don't think I was around. But I did enjoy it, but I do wonder how much it's going to hold up nowadays, because is it all physical comedy or silly comedy or just
it's very silly. I didn't even, because my dad loved it, and Dad's Army, and you know, all
I like Dad's Army. But that's all character pieces, you know, like, and there's a lot of sentimentality in that.
It's all very, that's one of the things about British comedy as well. The Royal Family, I think, stands out, is British comedy is just very broad.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know. Yeah, no, Dad's
saying silly things and falling over. It's very Germanic comedy.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Dad's Army to me is comfort watching, and that probably colours my view on it a little.
I don't know why I didn't establish that, because obviously it was on when I was a kid. My dad loved it. You know, should be a comfort watch for me, but I'd never.
It's like watching a selection of granddads. It's great.
I don't want to watch a selection of granddads just pissing their pants and falling over.
It's all right. I don't know.
It's Germanic. It's just Germanic humor versus Mediterranean humor. I think.
But there were some standout episodes when, like, Frasier gets outed as a conscientious objector for the First World War, and that is a particularly like interesting episode, I think.
Okay.
Because of course, if you were a First World War conscientious objector, people would, like, you know, look down on you.
Oh, spit on you.
Yeah.
You get the white feather, and there's that film, The White Feather.
Yeah, yeah. But then it turned out that Frasier actually, he was a medic, so he didn't do any fighting, but he was still there. And then there was a situation where he had to bring in his medic knowledge and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like, oh well,
that's some actual. Because whatever, just all my memories of it is just silliness, just farce. Mm. Not the good kind of farce. It's a good farce. I like French farce.
Yeah, yeah. It has its moments and it has its silliness. I don't know. But then again, I just find it very comfortable because it has that. What's that thing when it's not nostalgia, but it's like nostalgia before we were born. Like, it's that comfortable kind of cozy kind of. You know, they got the cute old, like, the old vehicles, you know, and
I think it's nostalgia. Yeah, I think it can be nostalgia, even if it maybe it isn't.
Because Dad's Army, of course, I think was made in the 70s. About the
40s.
So it's this weird throwback kind of history lesson kind of thing.
So we're significantly further from when Dad's Army was made than Dad's Army was from.
Shit, it really is, isn't it? By quite a margin.
That's like that. This is what I heard a bit ago. We are closer to The Last Crusade than The Last Crusade was to The First Crusade.
Wow. That's, Christ. Yeah. Hang on a minute. There's another one. It's something like we are closer to the Roman Empire than the Roman Empire was to the building of the pyramids, or something like that.
Okay, this is just a quote I heard on something the other day that just you prompted. The Greeks invented sex. The Romans realized you could do it with women.
Nice. Oh dear me. Do you know? I don't want to sound reactionary when I say this or whatever, but like, if there wasn't the stigma around having sex with men, I think that like society would be a lot more socially developed. Just like
I think 99. I mean, this is a very commonly held viewpoint, I think, but I think 99% of people are bisexual, and we're just what's encultured? Is that a word? Into leaning more. Yeah,
but also I mean. A lot of the thoughts that we have about sex, it's all socially constructed, right? Like,
well, exactly, yeah.
You know, like,
there is something
maybe,
lean one way or the other, but yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, this, yeah, of course, yeah. Our boundaries as to what a sexuality is, even, are given to us,
I mean, there's obviously like hormonal stuff and you know, like evolutional stuff and all that kind of stuff that sort of comes about. But like in an alternative universe, like you'd just, I don't know, like you'd have the lads round for a shag in a football game or something, you know? Like it's just
like give each other a hand job while you're watching the football.
Yeah. Like it just
double up the fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just be like, yeah, you know, you wonder like what would society be like if there wasn't just that, you know, the whole hang up about sex and how it gets involved in you know, politics and all this kind of stuff, you know, like it could just be.
We're in an era where you're freer than ever, I think, I would say, probably maybe not than ever, but in the modern era, we're freer than ever to be any sexuality you want. In terms of gender expression, stuff like that. But from the Americans, we're also more puritanical than we have been before in my lifetime.
It feels like there's a
Shah put it well, actually. Shah put, because Red Letter Media have been making a point of this, that like to Gen Z, it's like sex is cringe.
Sex, ooh.
And I see that reaction a lot, particularly in American things. And Shah said, yeah, we'll defend anybody's right to fuck whoever they want, but none of us actually want to. I think like Gen X, I think, was a particularly horny generation, so it's very weird. Like the kids, they're not horny. It's weird.
Don't clip that.
When I say kids, my kids, I mean to 20 plus. Young people.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was, like going to like university, for example. I don't know. It didn't feel like a prudish place or time then.
No, the 90s, I think, was kind of like very, I mean, again, this is not a novel thought, but like it was like the second 60s.
Yeah.
In terms of everything feeling free and open and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I know that had very specific constraints, but, especially if you're in, you know, relatively privileged person, that's how it felt.
Maybe it comes down to, because the thing, it feels a little bit like, I don't know if it's it feels like it's linked in with a lot of things, like the declining reproduction rates and things like that. Like it almost seems like now that we're in an age where because the thing is, you say, we're free to, you know, fuck whoever wants us or whatever as well, more so than we're also free to not. Because, you know, nowadays, just being single for your whole life or not settling down or not having children is more of an option now than it ever has been before, especially for women who no longer need, you know, their husband's signature to open a credit card and things like that. Like,
But I get that. I think that's right. But at the same time, where's the horniness gone? Why aren't people horny anymore?
Why aren't people horny? Could it be chemicals? Could it be the chemicals they're putting in the meat?
Or is it maybe, because I mean, I'm maybe oversharing here, I'm a very horny person, but my horniness, I do not want a sexual relationship with another human being. I think I've never been into casual relationships. I'm like demi-romantic or whatever. Like, I need to know a person very well to want to actually, you know, blah blah blah, but I don't want a relationship now. largely because I want to be in control of my time 100%. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and you can't do that in a relationship.
No.
And also, I mean, look at me. but my horniness is the internet. If you're horny, you know, great. You know,
for now, it's fucking now, yeah.
So maybe it's just that. Maybe it's just like you can take care of your horniness. So, yeah, we got sex toys that we never dreamt of in the 90s. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Both for every gender. Maybe it's just easier to just take care of it as a mechanical thing and then separate sex from relationships.
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly. It might be that might have been the route that we go down. Maybe internet porn has ruined us. I know there'd be some people that would.
Well, I mean, I think that's definitely true. But I think I'm so tired of actual pornography that I'm developing kinks for things that are not pornographic.
What, like smoking?
I don't want to go into too much detail. No, just very ordinary things.
Not feet though. Let's rule that out because I know what you're like.
No. Nothing. Nothing that is even really easy to define.
Mm.
Just things that can very easily be satisfied on YouTube.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. To be honest, with me, I feel a little bit similarly. Like, you know, internet porn, you just type in a word and you get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me,
it's a bit like my TV thing. It is the too much choice.
And it's given me pause for thought about what I really, you know, desire in that kind of, you know, in people. And it's a lot of it for me is like, it's a personality. Like it's a, like there's a, you know, that's
which
the thing.
You don't get in porn.
You don't get in porn. No.
Absolutely in porn. That's part of what I'm talking about with the YouTube thing. It's a vibe rather than.
Yeah. It's a vibe. It's like, it's kind of like.
It's porn. It's, porn and porn searching is very mechanical.
Yeah.
I want this body part doing this to this body part.
That's it. Yeah, no. But it's like it's a bit like an alternative at women and sort of punky, gothy, skate, anything that's not someone who takes a bit of pride in just going against the grain a little bit, like that's
but not in the prepackaged kind of
no
you know, look at emo or looking like a god, like, you know, not those prepackaged alternative cultures. Something about alternative cultures being dissolved. This will come up when we talk about Dinner in America, so I'll leave.
Yeah. Well, I've got that ready to go, so me and Rosie will probably watch it tonight.
Looking forward to you watching it, yeah. I mean, I love that Hamish started it, and then I assume it was about 20 minutes in, he was just like, the main character's a prick. he is at the start, yeah. I virtually guarantee that you'll warm to him and you'll love him by the end, but yeah, the prick, he's just a dickhead.
Well, that's
The prick at the beginning.
Yeah. I'll certainly. I keep lining up a shitload of films. I wanna put forward as my suggestion for Space Virgins, like so many.
Can I actually very briefly? I went on a bit of a film binge over the last day or two. I'm just going to very briefly talk about. So, watch Disclosure Day. Terrible. Mm-hmm. Watched a 2013 very low budget sci-fi film called Coherence.
Mm-hmm.
The premise of which is the middle class people are having a dinner party, and there's a comet going over at the time, and this comet causes, they don't really sort of explain it too well because, you know, quantum decoherence. And they bit by bit discover that if they go outside of the house, they just come back to that house, but it's a different multiverse version of that house, and there's different versions of them. So basically, so it's essentially saying the multiverse is true, but because of something this comet is doing, they have access to all the multiverses. Oh. And then things, it's very low budget, so it's all very just like people talking, people, you know, what should we do, coming up with a plan. It's really cool, yeah. Not a bit wonky at the end, but like pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
And I watched Source Code from 2011, which was and the one you'll like, a film from 2020, which I think I've vaguely heard of, called Love and Monsters.
Oh, okay.
So it's similar in tone to Psycho Gorman ish. In terms of, like, it's funny, but not like it's still, you know, the action is grounded. It's an action adventure. It's just about this young lad who. So there's an apocalypse happens where animals apart from mammals, become monsters. Like, they become huge and dangerous, and so, and everybody's, and kills most of the population, and everybody's living in bunkers. And he travels from, he's kind of like not very capable, but he travels from, or attempts to travel from, his bunker to the bunker where his girlfriend is, his girlfriend of 7 years ago when he was a teenager. And he just attempts that journey, and it's just about that journey. But it's a post-apocalypse where everybody's nice to each other. Everybody's cooperative.
That's good,
It's really cool. It's really fun. Really enjoyed it.
I've been watching the new series of House the Dragon, and I know you're going to hand wave that away with like Game of Thrones is burned for me, but it's good. It's really good. It's got a lot. It's got, they've upped the dialogue this series. They've upped the character development as well. There's genuine, like, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that they've made it as interesting as they could have, given that we know where the story is going. So
because it's a prequel.
I think
if Game of Thrones hadn't been burned for me, I'm just seeing bits and bobs of people reacting positively to it. It seems good, but it is just.
I'd implore you to watch Dunkin' Egg, because that is another, like, it doesn't mean anything. It is just a charming adventure, 6-episode series.
It's so burned, but I can't. Like, I know you're right, but I can't. It's so burned.
It's just, and you'll like it because it's got the intergenerational relationships thing, you know? friendships, you know, like...
Friendships.
Yeah. It's just like the chemistry between Duncan the Tall and an Egg is just... It's, I don't know how they done it, really. Like, it's just... It's really good on-screen chemistry that I'm...
Maybe I'll give that one a pop. That's an episode.
Sorry, Duncan. An episode.
Is that what it is? You said...
Oh, Duncan Egg, 6 episodes.
Oh, that's a show.
Yeah.
Might give that a pop. I'll search for a moment of weakness and give that a pop.
Okay, it's 6 episodes. They're like half an hour each. It's really, it's a bit more old school. It's a bit... They've done it, you know, I guess you'd say in the British style of things, where it's a short story.
Yeah.
And it's all... I mean, it's almost a film. It's almost a film. You could, if you watched it back to back, you'd have a 3-hour film.
There's very little distinction between films and TV now, I think. In terms of like prestige TV versus mainstream cinema, it's the same. Like, prestige TV now is just very long movies. Not just in terms of production quality, which is true, but in terms of the kinds of stories that they're telling as well.
Yeah.
You said something about having some films lined up.
Oh, so many. Right. Well, I know. Should I spoil what my next film for Space Virgins is going to be? Because it is going to be...
I don't think there's any help. Because, I spoiled Dinner in America like months ago.
Okay. It is going to be the Star Wars porno.
No, I'm up for that.
All right. We'll make sure it's the same version, because there's probably quite a few. There's one that's very specific, like, basically they do a beat for beat version of A New Hope, but with sex and porn and stuff.
I'm looking forward to that. I've been meaning to watch that since you mentioned it, but didn't get around to it.
Now I'm drawing a blank, but every, like, when I'm just driving the bus, there'll be something that comes to me and go, damn. I know.
I keep thinking. So podcasts where they talk about films in a very film buffy way are 10 a penny.
Yes.
And podcasts where they talk about bad films are 10 a penny.
Yeah.
And I don't want to really do either of those things. I just want it to be genuinely just films we find interesting, whether they're good or bad or whatever. Just films we find genuinely interesting, but talking about them in a... Like, we don't read Empire magazine. We're not conditioned to like what we're supposed to like. It's things that we genuinely have some affection.
I genuinely enjoy watching the stuff. Like, to be honest, the porn ruins the Star Wars porno for me. It takes you out of the film, right? I might.
That's puritanicalism.
It's not just puritanical. Basically, it's like, what would A New Hope be done, right? Do it on today's equipment, but on like no budget. So basically, it's the reverse way of doing Star Wars, where you've got a huge budget but limited technology because you're in the past. You've got huge amounts of technology but the tiniest budget. See what you get. See what, you know, what actors you could drag, you know. And
that's very much like the there's that company. It's not Troma, is it? There's that company that for every blockbuster they make a low budget version with a very similar title.
The Hallmark or.
No, it's not Hallmark. like it's a straight knockoff. They just do a low budget version of the same thing for every given blockbuster.
Okay.
Like there's already one out for Odyssey.
All right. Okay.
Like that kind of thing.
Journey.
No, it's not Troma. It's the other one.
Trek.
Hang on. Let me give you that.
Ancient walking. Ancient boats.
Well, no. The Odyssey one's just called Odyssey because you can't copyright that.
Oh, right. Okay. All right.
Or the Asylum. They're called the Asylum. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. I'll find you some examples.
I wonder if I should watch The Odyssey. It's in cinema. Is it in cinemas at the moment? Is it?
Yeah. Because I don't like Nolan.
I think.
I'm intrigued about the.
I think he's got more hits than misses.
He's got the only one I like is Interstellar.
You don't like Inception. Excellent.
No.
You don't like Batman films? I really liked his take on the Batmans.
I don't like Batman.
I don't like Batman, Adam West, yes. I will like... Oh, shit, that's one for it. The Batman movie.
Which one?
The Adam West Batman movie. Batman, the movie.
See, my take is that Batman is an inherently silly character, which I know Batman fans don't feel that way. But to me, Batman is an inherently silly character.
So depends on the version of Batman.
No, but as a just conceptually.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So Batman has to be treated sillily, but that 60s version of the silly is too silly for me.
It's quite silly. I like it. It's just fun. It's just unapologetic fun.
Again, it's that British, just silly comedy that I can't.
Tomb Invader.
Yeah, these are some examples of Asylum knockoff.
Alien, yeah. Predator. Yeah. Avengers Grimm. Oh my god, that looks all right actually for the movie.
That looks kind of cool. Yeah.
Who's the lady with the bow and arrow?
No idea.
Probably, a battle of legendary proportions.
I bet she's little Red Riding Hood. If it's Avengers Grimm. And she's wearing a red hood.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So who are the others then?
Not a clue. The two dudes on the right just looks like the same person twice.
That's because they got the exact same facial expression of the movie poster tough guy expression.
Oh, this one's genius. You're going to enjoy this one.
Oh, my God. The Terminators.
No.
No. Titanic 2.
So they're clearly, like, they're audacious. They're tongue-in-cheek, but they're just fun. I think it's half to like trick dads in the DVD rental store if those still existed, and it's half just like tongue in cheek fun. Let's do a low budget rip off of every fucking blockbuster.
But how can they afford to do so many of these films?
People like enjoy them. I think they're like a cult thing. People will, you know, when a blockbuster comes out, they'll go, oh, we go watch the Asylum one. You know, like they're excited for the Asylum version.
Who are these people?
I mean, I can see it.
I can see it, but I'm
kind of our, like, you know, our rejection of, you know, trying to, you know, like, yeah, mainstream bourgeois, blah blah blah. It's like, no, I'll watch the punk reaction to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so many that we could do that we should get around to, like The Cube. That would be a good one for one day.
Cube. So my ex girlfriend Katya, whom I was with.
She loves The Cube, doesn't 20, she?
20 years ago, 15 years ago, sorry?
She loves The Cube, doesn't she?
She was trying to get me to watch The Cube for however long we've known each other, which is probably like 15 plus years at this point, and I only watched it the other month with her.
Mm.
And it was fun, yeah, it's perfect, yeah. I didn't love it, but enjoyed it.
No, it's not like a classic, but...
She adores it.
What else? I need to write these down, really.
You need an actual... Do you not have, like, a little notebook? Because I think that would suit you. I think you'd enjoy that.
Little notebook. Not really.
Like a physical, like, you know, like...
No, send a WhatsApp message to myself.
But you like... Because you like your fountain pen. And like
you can't carry a fountain pen around, not as a bus driver.
Oh, you absolutely can. You just keep it upright.
We have uniforms. Like, we can't just...
Do you not have a pocket here?
Yes, that's the worst place to store a fountain pen. If it leaks, you're fucked.
No, you just clip it on, because they've got a really strong clip, the Safaris. Like, that'll clip on your shirt pocket. As long as it's that way up, it's like if it goes that way up, you're fucked. But that way up, they're fine.
You've got the same colour Safari as me, haven't you? Where did I put it? It's not. Is it? Oh, there it is. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I've got the same colour.
Yep.
Oh, I haven't written this for a while. Did I? Yeah, it's dried. It's dry. Has it dried up?
You could just get a notepad and a ballpoint.
Well, we have to carry a pen for all kinds of reasons.
Oh, you do carry a pen.
It's basically the rules.
Note down your notes.
I'm looking at them.
That's not a thing you already do because that would be so you.
I've already got ink on my finger.
I've got I think we've both got the refillable ones, right? Where you do this to refill it.
Oh no! I get the cartridges.
Oh, you got the cartridges. Okay, so I've got the ink bottle.
Yeah,
but the ink's down to about here now.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to put like my entire fingers inside this thing to turn the thing. So yeah, every time I refill it, my fingers are just black.
How much writing do you do?
I make notes quite frequently. It's rare that I make. I'll often make notes when I'm playing a game. Not often. I'll occasionally make notes when I'm playing a game. But more often, it's when I'm trying to think something through. And they're not really notes. They're sort of like half doodles, half diagrams, just trying to work something out in my head kind of things.
I like the Parker biros. You know, it's pretty standard, you know, nice biro. But
I like the clicky Parker ball points.
Yeah, that's,
yeah, they're really good. Yeah.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about getting one of those, but I'm very.
But I for some reason I've spotted one in the reduced section of like a Tesco or something for like £3. Mm. I was like, all right.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Is that your work pen?
Well, one of my work pens. Like I say, it's so important that you keep a pen. I keep two spares.
Why is it important you keep a pen?
So we have to fill out something called a defect card. So if we use a bus, if we're the first one to use the bus in a day, we have to do a whole bunch of checks and then like note them down. Then whenever we get off a bus, we have to sign off on the defect card. And then whenever we get on a different bus, we also have to sign on to the bus. Also,
I'm surprised that stuff's not digital at this point.
It probably will be in a couple of months' time. There's a lot of old school stuff in the bus world that's just here because it's always been, you know, like as in just like, just the ticket machines still print out a physical paper ticket for some reason. Like it's just no one cares. Like, you know, and tickets on the whole generally pretty cheap. We max out our tickets at £3 for a single, which, to be fair, is a solid deal. You can go really long distances for £3. Like,
yeah.
And now, of course, you know, Andy Burnham's going to bring that down to £2 starting next year, which good. All right, fine. You know, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
That will.
It's weird for a Labour government to do something that I don't hate.
Yeah. You know, it is going to help people. A lot of people think, oh, it's just £1 here or whatever. But no,
anybody who's doing a minimum wage job and goes to work by bus, that's going to add up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's there and back. It's £2 a day, it's £10 a week.
That's your lunch.
Yeah.
Actually, probably not your lunch anymore. No. But in the 90s, that would have been your lunch.
I don't know. It's £10 a week in your pocket, and that's if you only get the one bus.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you go. That's something.
I feel a little constipated because we haven't addressed Oblivion.
The game?
Yes. When last time you were looking at my rankings, and I think we ended an episode with you will talk about my Oblivion rating.
What have you given it?
Can't remember.
Oh, sorry, just before we do go on to that, can I finish off the top 10 British sitcoms on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh yeah.
Oh no, sorry, britishcomedyguide.co.uk. But yeah, we'll give it. Right, so do a quick rundown. So Only Fools is 1, Blackadder is 2, which
Blackadder was very occasionally good, but mostly
it didn't overstay its welcome, though. The four series was okay. Vicar Dibley. Awful. I liked
one of the. I would rather die than watch that.
I like Vicar Dibley, although okay, number 4 is Dad's Army. Number 5 is Fawlty Towers. Number 6, what about Yes Minister?
Very good.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah.
7, Porridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't mind Porridge.
I know. I really like Porridge. Porridge would be higher than 7 for me.
I agree.
It's interesting. It's got a bit of class consciousness to it as well.
Yeah, very much.
Which I know you like. 8 is Open All Hours. No.
Do you know what? I loved Open All Hours as a kid. I rewatched it recently. Still enjoy it. even though it's everything that I say I hate about British comedy, but I think I just enjoy the characters.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's not done it for me. I don't hate it like you hate Vicar of Dibley, but it's not nine is The Good Life. Never liked that, really, no.
Love that as a kid. Still holds up. Yep, I don't mind. Actually, do you know what? There's more British comedy that I like than I thought I did. Yeah, I like Good Life.
Okay. One Foot in the Grave is number 10.
Yeah. It was one of those that the catchphrase became the show.
Yes. Hey, don't believe it. Yeah. It's just. And they'd make a joke about that in Father Ted, which is quite funny. Oh, which is actually number 11.
Yeah, Father Ted. I mean, problem now, but it was good. It was good at the time. I don't think it holds up. I think it was of its time. I think it was of the 90s, but I couldn't watch it now. I've tried, and it's not enjoyable to me anymore. There was a kind of humour in the 90s that was sort of... It was the Monty Python style of humour finally filtering through to the mainstream.
Yeah.
Like Father Ted, Spaced. There are definitely other examples that I can't think of. Those kinds of things that I enjoyed at the time, but I don't think I could tolerate now.
Yeah. Red Dwarf is all the way down at 18.
That shouldn't be on any list of comedy due to my understanding of comedy is that it's funny.
So this is more sci-fi then, is Red Dwarf.
No, because it's not that either. It's literally nothing. You might as well watch nothing.
No, I like Red Dwarf. That's oh yeah.
I don't hate it as much as Vicar of Dibley. But...
As much as who?
Vicar of Dibley.
I like Vicar.
I'd rather watch Vicar of Dibley, but Vicar of Dibley is more offensive.
No, I like Red Dwarf. I really didn't like the Back to Earth trilogy of special the special. Let's do it in the real world one, but it's
a new, did they do like a reboot? Is that a newer thing?
They did like a they did a reboot of three special episodes that are awful,
right.
But then after that it sort of goes back to what it was and it's okay, but it does sort of run its course. Like it would have been nice if they'd have brought in like newer like science fiction concepts.
I don't think they should ever bring comedies back, even when it works. I think at best pointless.
Yes, I think I am actually like kind of. Yeah,
if you're still funny, do something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I won't watch the new episode of Frasier. I haven't seen the new ones of King of the Hill. Like it's just.
I don't think I'm going to watch the King. Even out of curiosity, I'm not going to watch the King. I really like Arrested Development, and it was a show that was kind of like a little bit ahead of its time, and it got cut short. It only got. Mm-hmm. I think three seasons, and then later they did two more seasons, and they're generally not liked. I think they're okay. Actually, I think they're no worse than the average of the rest of the show. They don't hit the highs, but even given that, I don't make it. Don't come back and remake things. It always has an awkward feel to it, even when it works.
Yeah, and a lot of the time it feels like
this is specific to comedy. I'm okay with other kinds of things.
I'm not sure. Like, I like things closed off and gone, you know, sealed off.
I still prefer to just make something new. Yeah, for sure. But it doesn't bother me so much with non-comedy.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like in Bob's Burgers, they occasionally reference actors like to talk about acting a lot. You know, and it's like, it feels a little bit like that. Like, it feels like they're doing it for themselves. They're doing it because they enjoyed making it,
for themselves, but because it always feels a bit like, well, I've tried to do all these other things and nobody liked them, so let's go back to what you like. It's like I want that acclaim again, you know.
It's like if I started doing distro reviews again.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like
you should just review Arch every month.
It is still enjoying Arch, no problems. Rosie's on Arch, no problems.
That's cool.
It is. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that I could get her onto Vim, you know.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
I'll give it time.
Because she's tech nerdy anyway, right? She works in data in statistics. Is it she does
data?
Data analysis stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, yeah, she's leaning that way anyway. I think she's going to appreciate what Vim does. Somebody with that mindset.
Yeah. Well, I think she's told me outright that she'd be interested in giving it a go, even though she'd be going in quite blind.
If she does stats and stuff, does she use R? Or is it all
R?
Is she not that low level? Yeah, R's the statistical math language, isn't it?
I don't think she's at that level, that low level. Not that low. It's mostly
statistical computing and graphics, apparently.
Oh, okay, it's mostly like the spreadsheet level.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So whatever. Yeah. Okay, you're going to hate this one. Some mothers do have them at 22.
I can tolerate some mothers do have them because it's so. It is the stuff I hate, but it knows it's that, and it's so that.
What?
And also, it was very weirdly, for its time, like a main character that reads very gay as, like, the main character. And that's interesting in itself.
What is As Time Goes By? I vaguely remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds awful. Like,
I think that's one of those Sunday afternoon ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Judy Dench, very sedate, old people kind of sitcom. It wasn't awful.
The Young Ones? Mm.
Good in its time.
I don't know. Thin Blue Line. We rewatched Thin Blue Line lately.
No, nothing with, what's his name?
Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, he's, you know those people who are just, even if you give them funny writing, they make it not funny through their presentation. For me, he's that. He's like an Andor funny filter. He's why I don't like Blackadder. Well, him and the dude who plays Baldrick. Like, everybody else in Blackadder is really funny. Anytime those, the two main characters are on screen, I'm like, you're making it unfunny. Because they do play it too broad. It's too overdone.
Well, I will defend Thin Blue Line. I think they did have a season 3 lined up, but for some reason didn't go through with it. Bread is in there. League of Gentlemen. Oh, I'm Alan Partridge. No,
anything Alan Partridge is excellent.
Yeah, it's good. Even the newer stuff. Oh, there's a new Alan Partridge thing that's coming out now. Yeah, it is.
League of Gentlemen is another example of that very 90s comedy that I was talking about. I think it was good in its time, but I couldn't.
Oh, this one you'll hate. Bottom.
I don't mind Bottom. Yeah.
Oh my God, what's wrong with you? You have such an inconsistent. Bottom is everything I don't like about British sitcoms.
No, because it's crude. It's what's the word? It's vulgar. I enjoy vulgarity.
Good night, sweetheart.
Oh, that was horrible.
That's down at 50.
It shouldn't be on. What's that? Could you even call that a comedy? It's only like.
It's like. Oh, I remember that now. That was fucking.
Yeah. Wartime time travel with that lanky, weird looking dude.
Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Yeah.
Horrible. Wow. Okay. You know what? You are actually bringing me round. Oh, Phoenix Nights is at 36. I didn't hate that. I thought that was quite good, actually.
I didn't hate it. Yeah. I'm not sure why I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I thought it had some funny ideas.
Yeah. It's
quite crass, which I like. That's my problem with Only Fools and Horses. If you're going to go working class and grimy and blah, blah, because Only Fools and Horses feels patronizing towards the working class, whereas like Royal Family, Bottom, that is sympathetic to the working class and embraces the crassness and the grime.
I think with Only Fools and Horses, it depends on the, like, it has good episodes and it has awful episodes. Like it spans too much of a range.
I don't like things about London as well. Although the exception, Steptoe and Son on the list.
Yes, it is. I mean,
that was good for its time.
I don't know about that.
That was fucking depressing. That's one of those comedies where you just come away depressed. Yeah. Which is again a very British comedy thing.
What about Absolutely Fabulous? Men Behaving Badly?
Absolutely not.
No, those ones kind of passed by. My Family.
Don't really. It was that the standard BBC.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
That was almost like ChatGPT wrote a sitcom for the BBC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's
I kind of enjoy you know the American version of that, which is stuff like Who's the Boss in the 80s and Perfect Strangers and stuff like that. I love those. I love the American super mainstream ones.
Okay, yeah. Hang on a minute. I do want to juxtapose this. I'm sticking with it. Best American sitcoms. I just want to see what we're up against.
Yeah, because there's that's interesting, because there's the ones that are obviously peak and pushing the boundaries, like Arrested Development, and then there's the very sedate ones, which are just very warming, like Who's the Boss.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got what we're expecting here. Seinfeld.
I'm going to give you an out of 10 rating for each one.
Okay, all right. Seinfeld.
0. Minus a million. Never funny.
3. see, The Simpsons, when I did my Simpsons review,
what do you rate?
I split them between seasons 1, 2...
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Simpsons, when I rate The Simpsons, I rate The Good Simpsons. And The Good Simpsons...
9.
7, 8, 9, yeah. Very good.
I don't know what All in the Family is.
I know the name, but that's all.
Okay. MASH? Yeah, I knew MASH would be up there. I never...
MASH feels more like a British sitcom to me. Because it's very cynical again. And it lacks that... it doesn't lack sentimentality, but it's always very... It's always bittersweet rather than... I like a bit of sentimentality in my comedy. Unless it goes full crass.
Mm. I Love Lucy.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that was never really, I think, aired here before my time. I've seen bits and bobs, but I've not seen enough to really judge it.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. I like Cheers. I know this is unpopular, but I like Cheers more than Frasier. It's still like 5, 6. It wasn't amazing.
Yeah, no. I don't know what the Mary Tyler Moore show is.
Hey, that's one that's before our time and very American, not aired here.
Saturday Night Live, are we calling that a sitcom?
0.
Friends,
I never enjoyed Friends, but it did what it said on the tin. It was a functionally complete sitcom for the audience it was aimed at, which was all of my girlfriends at the time who would watch it fucking endlessly.
Like, yeah.
For me, like 3 or something.
But it's one of those, it's background television.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever choose to watch it. I haven't choose to watch it. I don't know. This one I like, Taxi. I like Taxi.
Taxi was very good. Yeah. Taxi was an outstanding sitcom. Yeah, that's a 10.
I like Danny DeVito in it. I like the one where Christopher Lloyd plays a crackhead in it. You know, like
Yes.
I found that amazing. You know, just like... Arrested Development. Oh, hang on a minute. Do you want to give a point score out of 10 for Taxi?
I gave it a 10. I said 10, yeah. 10?
10? Oh, that's a bit higher.
Arrested Development is 10. It pushed boundaries as to what a sitcom could be. It really pushed the mockumentary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the first, but it did it very early. And it's just so cleverly written and so intricately interlaced. All the jokes, the way they recur and the way they relate to each other, it's excellent, like top tier comedy.
Sex in the City? Sex and the City. Yeah,
that's not a sitcom. That's a light drama.
30 Rock.
I never enjoyed that. That's one.
Don't know if I've ever seen it. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David.
Very good.
I'm a big fan of the theme tune.
again, that's very cynical. That's like top tier, like Mediterranean, like completely cynical comedy. So yeah. I like a bit more sentimentality in my comedy personally, but it's very, very good.
Frasier is number 15.
I find Frasier hard to rate because I do, when I watch it, there's bits that I really enjoy, but then overall I think it's sort of tricking you.
it's tricking you. Well, Honeymooners?
I don't know that one.
Okay. There's a lot. What about the Dick Van Dyke Show? That was before our time.
Yeah.
That's Freaks and Geeks. I've never seen an episode of that.
Seen Freaks and Geeks. It's all right. It's very of its time again. Very 90s.
I'm surprised The Cosby Show is held up at number 21.
Cosby Show was like the epitome of like sentimental, warming, comforting, unchallenging comedy, like sitcom.
Mm-hmm. Their version of The Office is 20 at 20.
That should be much higher.
Yeah, great. I agree. I think it might have gone on for a little long, but...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. But it never really gets horrible. Even when it's got some horrible characters in it who are hard to watch, there's still some good episodes in those late seasons, I would say.
Yeah. This is an interesting one. One that's actually still going on. 26, South Park.
Yeah, I've never really been a South Park person. I've always had friends who are really into it, and you know, I can watch an episode and enjoy it, but it's a bit too like very easy cynicism, like ripping things apart that are very easy to rip apart and very obvious.
I feel it's a bit strange.
It feels like Family Guy, but a bit cleverer, but not as much cleverer than it thinks.
Maybe I like that it goes through phases. Like the you can almost see the journey of the creators, the political journey of the creators going on through the episodes.
Yeah.
So it's quite. I like it, but I never think to seek it out. It never.
Yeah.
No,
I'd watch it, but I wouldn't watch two in a row.
And one of the things I remember, they were doing a Donald Trump episode, and everyone was saying how it pushes the envelope. Oh, how audacious is it? And then I watched it, and I was like, no, this is one of the much weaker episodes. He's just having sex with the devil, like it's or sad, like whatever they decide to get. Like, oh, he's got a tiny dick. Like, come on, like,
yeah,
you've just gone. Like, you could have said something. You know,
it feels very like frat boy type
humor. Yeah,
not a little bit cleverer than that, I guess, but fundamentally that.
Yeah. So Big Bang Theory comes in at 34.
I will defend Big Bang Theory. It's the most mid thing that's ever been.
Will and Grace, 38.
I never enjoyed Will and Grace at all.
Family Guy, 42. No, it's a bit, you know. Family Guy. I'll watch it if it's on, but you know,
I would change channel, turn it off. Can't stand it.
Okay, interesting one here. Happy Days.
Happy Days was on a lot during my childhood, and it was always one of those shows that came on. I was like, oh, but then half the time I would kind of get into the episode, and I really like Henry Winkler as a person. He seems like
he's lovely. Yeah.
One of the nicest people.
I'm tempted to go back and watch Happy Days.
That would be an interesting thing to do, yeah.
Because when I look,
it's literally the show where the phrase "jump the shark" comes from.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. Like the later series is really shit the bed, don't they?
Off the rails, yeah.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's exactly what we're talking about when they go outside of what their actual premise is and they try and broaden.
Oh, but there was a lot of politics around Happy Days, because Happy Days was, of course, very big at the time, and the Fonz started out as a bit more as a bit of a bad boy biker character.
Yeah.
And then as the seasons went on, TV standards started putting pressure on Happy Days to be a bit more like, got to set a better example for the children.
Reagan era, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you see the continuing beating down of its creativity.
I think it works because you read it when watching it, as I remember it, as the Fonz sort of softening as he makes friends with, you know, the normies.
Yeah, but then the Fonz then starts going a bit like, it's cool to stay in school.
Oh yeah, no, it goes too far. Yeah,
yeah, like it's. I don't know. I'd like to revisit it, but I doing so under the lens of the political. That's why I like the Adam West Batman, because you look at it through the sort of the lens of Cold War propaganda that it was intertwined with, and it becomes very interesting.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
You know, like that Adam West Batman is the story of the sort of the liberal American exceptionalism, the millionaire that is, you know.
I mean, it's still that, but in a very cold.
Oh, well, no, I'd say like the Christopher Nolan Batman is a fascist. Like, I think he completely.
What's the same? It's the same thing.
The wrapping is different.
If you went to. What's Batman's alter ego?
Bruce Wayne.
If you went to Bruce Wayne in the Nolan version of Bruce Wayne and said, "Are you a fascist?" He'd be like, "No, I'm a liberal." Like,
yes,
like he is a fascist, but his self image would be of a progressive, philanthropic liberal.
I guess so, but I think that the Adam West Batman has a lot more. Adoration for the American ideals, you know, like personal liberty and freedom and stuff like that.
Definitely. Yeah, but only because of that dichotomy of, you know, freedom versus
It's they're similar things because they are the same character with different presentation, but the presentation is important.
Maybe we should do a Space Virgins where we watch. Is there a film version of the 60s?
Yes, that's the
So we watch that, and we watch one of the whichever of the Nolan Batmans you would prefer. We literally watch those back to back and then talk about it. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. It would either be Batman, either be the one with the Joker with Heath Ledger, the one with Bane.
I've not seen the Bane one, so I prefer it to be the Bane one because I've not seen it.
See, they're both political and the Joker. The Joker is. He's a chaotic character. I'm not going to say anarchist because when I think of anarchists, I think of like gardening
and libraries.
Gardening and libraries and allotment associations and shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he is the agent of tear it all down. Accelerationism or something maybe or.
Not really accelerationism because he just wants the chaos.
Terrorism. He's just a distilled terrorist.
Yeah, he's just a pure terrorist.
And then
it's chaos. Is he wants chaos?
Yeah, and Bane actually,
I'm sympathetic to on some level, but I don't enjoy that film.
But he represents an emotion, doesn't he? And which is why I like how I like how they did it. They didn't give him much, really. They didn't give him an origin story, which they didn't. He didn't need an origin story.
They always flip between, especially with the Marvel stuff, doing or not doing origin stories. They believe that people got sick of origin stories. But I really like a good origin story.
I think it depends on the story that you're trying to tell. In the Christopher Nolan, Dark Knight, an origin story would have depreciated, because the Joker represents the society's feeling of discontent, but not.
He's an elemental.
But in Dark Knight Rises with Bane, they give him an origin story because he represents something more of a fight back. He literally storms the Gotham Stock Exchange.
Well, I heard somebody talking about that film fairly recently, and they said that the only compassionate act in the entire film is undertaken by Bane when he rescues somebody or something, and that's the only act of like actual heroism in the film, according to these people that were talking about the film.
It's been a while since I've seen the film. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think, is in it. He plays not Robin. He plays like the precursor to Robin. Robin before.
Right. See, one of my problems with Inception is that I don't like him as an actor.
I like him. He's good.
Yeah, I think most people do. He reads smarmy to me.
He's got a smarminess about him, but it doesn't make him unlikable, in my opinion.
It does for me. it makes everything he says. It's like I have a real problem with sincerity, and it makes everything he's saying seem insincere, and that just trips my brain out.
That's why I like Inception, because there is a lot. It feels a very sincere film, even though, yes, Joseph Gordon-Levitt has.
It's so fucking stupid.
But it's
it's the film. Do you know Piggy in the Middle? Did you call it that?
Yeah.
For Americans, it's called Keep Away or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Inception is the film version of that. Like, oh, you thought that was real? You fucking idiot! That wasn't real. This is real. Oh, you thought that was real? You fucking idiot. And you've got every reason to believe everything you're shown is real, because that's how films work.
But no, that's not how the film works. They tell you in explicit detail where they're going and what they're doing.
Beforehand?
Pretty much. They're going to go, okay, we're going to go a dream down. We're going to go a dream down again.
No. There's definitely instances where you are led to believe by the film that this is real, and then it isn't.
Okay, so the opening scene...
Multiple times.
Sure.
That's what the film rests on.
But you kind of know. That's the thing.
Like, he likes this twist, his gimmick, right?
Yeah.
Which, for me, it makes those films... Like, if the gimmick works for you, the film works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And for Interstellar, it did. For Inception, it did. But, yeah, it's just so fucking... Like, it's not... What you're shown is not complicated. But there's so much obfuscation going on that it's made to seem complicated, and that is just that's dumbness.
The bit at the end of Inception where the totem is spinning.
I've seen it once.
There's a little nudge and a wink at the end of Inception that's like, oh, is this all a dream? I knew they were going to do that, and I thought that's just a gimmick, a joke. That doesn't actually reflect on the film. That's just a little bit of. It's like when they go the end, or is it? You know, like that's it's that kind of.
But it's I've not experienced this, but I feel like if you straightforwardly explain the plot of Inception to somebody, it just sounds dumb.
But it's the thing is, it's. But the thing is about the Inception is that it's a film that is good entirely, like 80% on a stylistic level, right?
Like, yeah, that's not enough.
Depends on what you want out of a film.
What are we, Americans?
Well, I mean, we like their sitcoms, don't we?
Yeah,
no, I mean,
to be fair, only because they've got a lot of Jews. That's the only reason they do good sitcoms.
Okay,
we've got to be entirely honest.
Yet you gave Seinfeld a zero.
He's not the only fucking, you know, they're all written by Jews, mostly.
Don't clip that.
Jews are in control.
It's just we like that.
Yeah. So. They are the, because like I said, I think there is a tension, but there's a difference between Germanic humour, which is, you know, Northern and Northwestern Europe, and Mediterranean humour, which is Italian, Spanish, and Jewish, and... Mm-hmm. North African, I don't know what North African humor is, but yeah, that it's just in terms of comedy writing in America, especially in particular times, Jewish writers are very heavily represented, so they're carrying the torch from Mediterranean humor.
Inception, I find it just like it's just a nice looking film to watch, you know, like they've got lots of different styles. This might be a little bit of a film that is a film about films as well, because there's so much referential stuff that they pull in that...
What he thinks he's doing on an artistic level is playing, kind of like, what's that game? Stanley Parable, kind of like Stanley Parable.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking the language of film and what it naturally implies and does to your brain and playing with that to make you go like, oh, you thought this just because the film was in this particular way, or it's not really that... But it's so thin and dumb. I keep using the word dumb, but it's just such on such a basic level that I just find it dumb.
I've thought of another film that I might put to my list of RRR. It's Bollywood.
Oh, I know the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that one's quite political as well. And I find the political aspects of
especially from a perspective with which we're not
because right. Like there's obviously India subjected to colonialism by us, but there are several like reactions, is that the right word, or responses to our colonialism, and some of them are they're distinct from each other. I don't know how much it is for us to say I like that form of defending yourself against colonialism more than that one. But
what's it called? I think Zizek calls it patronizing care, where you know. Basically, us sort of having that attitude towards the colonized world is essentially us still taking the part of colonizers and saying, no, we're the strong ones who can take it.
Mm.
We can talk about everything, but can't talk about you because you're special and authentic. And you know, you're a victim. You're a perpetual victim. Like, we can have opinions about things we know some
people. Yeah, no, for sure. I think so, because one of the aspects about this, and the maker of RRR is, and I don't know this to, like, don't quote me on this because I've only ever, this has only come up, is a bit fashy. It's like, you can kind of see how, if you are resisting colonized, or you are anti, you know, you've been colonized and you want to, you know, you're pushing back, it is feasible to understand how ultra-nationalism can sort of be used as a big hammer to push back against colonizers, but then you you still end up with fascists. Like,
I mean, yeah, I mean, Gandhi was dodgy in many ways, and he had correspondences with Hitler, because in Gandhi's mind, he and Hitler were doing essentially the same thing, like defending the native people of this place against intrusion, which is understandable, but is also, you know.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I always have, like unsettled thoughts on like a lot of this, because, you know, here in the Forest of Dean, there is like a huge connection that local people have with the area and the land and the forest itself. But sometimes that veers a little bit into a type of hillbilliness where it's very hostile to all things outside, people moving in, and and I have noticed from living here that, like, and you know, before I lived here, I lived like 6 miles down the road. So I'm not a super outsider, but I'm not a super insider too. Like, there's a neighbor, as it were. But having people move into the area and be part of the area, I think does bring with it does bring it out of that hillbilly nature a little bit. Like, it does.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this at some length on something recently, didn't we? But I think, I think people coming in and wanting to be part of what the place is cool.
Yeah.
And I think it should be welcome because it adds richness. But people coming in and wanting to make it something else, that's where it depends on what the something else is.
If people move in, it will always become something else.
No, I mean, but
this is where all I believe a lot of the nuance comes in.
Yeah.
Is how does it because you have people move into the community, there will be a change because the community has literally changed.
The line for me, it is nuanced, but I think there's a distinct line. It's when capital comes in and wants to make it into like a theme park or something, or, you know, that's a hyperbolic version, but when capital comes in and wants to do something with it, which is transformative. Or when middle class people come in and want to treat it as a tourist place. They're not really living there. They just...
Well, second home type things.
Second
homes like that are just... they're generally a bit... You know,
I'd say commuters as well. You generalise.
Commuters, but the trouble is with somewhere like here is that there are so few jobs.
That's, you know, problem is capitalism. But I do think, I think you can be a commuter, a move to a place, and be a part of the community, but it's rare that happens because the commuters are coming from a place where they've learned to be atomized, not care about their neighbors, and blah, 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 and they bring that where they come.
I mean, is that not a lot more widespread now anyway? Is that not just a broader part of British culture?
What, sorry?
The atomization thing.
But I think it's less, like, it's not really present in my village, for example. Suburbs and urban, and, you know, it's rental people are moving moving somewhere else every 18 months. Like, you can't have to.
Is it an expansion of, well, the thing is, though, of course, it feels like employment hubs are, you know, increasingly centralized, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you know, Thatcher, this is an explicit thing that Thatcher wanted to have. I mean, she literally said there's no such thing as society. There's the family and what was the other thing?
The individual?
Family and the individual, yeah. Yeah. A lot of her policies were aimed at creating this alienation and destroying community and,
what's the word I'm thinking of? It's like evil genius. Like her. Like, she defined conservative ideology for even today, really.
Yeah, she didn't invent. I mean, it came from, when was The Economist, the opposite of Keynes. Keynes is like enemy. Anyway, that
I'm not thinking of Adam Smith, right?
No, much, much more recent.
Ayn Rand? Because she had a lot of Ayn Rand-ness about her.
Yeah, there was Ayn Rand in there, yeah.
She seemed very Ayn Rand-y. Also,
Hayek.
Oh, yeah.
So Thatcher's getting her stuff from Hayek, but she was an amazingly competent instrument of enacting it.
Yes.
Her praxis was top fucking notch.
Yeah. terrifyingly so, really. Like, you know,
I don't think we've had a prime minister in our history. I can't think of a political leader in history, with the exception of like Hitler, like who was as effective as she was.
Well, the thing is with Thatcher is that she had a clear ideological vision.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've had a prime minister in my lifetime with anything close to that, really.
The prime minister's probably Blair,
which was very similar to Thatcher's vision.
Yeah, I mean, but Thatcher's vision was... I mean, I think Blair was definitely more well-meaning, or at least now. Sell off the assets of the state and use... I mean, Thatcher was sell off the assets of the state and use that, give that money to rich people. Blair was sell off the assets of the state and use that to make everybody's lives a little bit better. Like, which is better, but possibly... And it can only come from Thatcher, follow Thatcher. And it's arguably more dangerous, ultimately. I think that it's possibly more destructive, ultimately.
It's more destructive to the left, because it takes...
It's more destructive to ever repairing that. I think what Thatcher did could be repaired. I think what Blair did is irreparable.
Is that because Blair is, I'm going to say, on the left, but on,
because he meshed the two things together. He linked privatization with public... The problem with Blair, like, Blair's thing worked. You know, people's standard of living went in. You know, there's childcare. You know, all these things that he did that were good. But you can only do it once, because you're selling off a bunch of assets to fund it. It's a one-time thing. And once those assets are gone, inevitably, you know, what the benefits you got from that fall away.
Yeah. Do you reckon Burnham's going to make any try and attempt at expanding any kind of nationalisation or anything like that?
I don't know where Burnham is politically.
Because he's moved around a lot over the years, hasn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. Like in the 90s, he was a staunch Blairite.
Yeah.
As mayor of Manchester, he's done some decent stuff. Mm. But even in his public statements now about stuff, he's all over the fucking shop. I just don't know. I don't know what he is.
Someone on Fedi did a thing that I identified with a lot. It's like every alternating thing is, that's not so bad. I want to bang my head against a wall. That's not so bad.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's perfect. Yeah.
I think
it'll be better than almost said Biden, Starmer. But that's such a fucking low bar.
It is a low bar. Because I think the only thing I can say about Starmer who was the Chancellor? Was it Rachel Reeves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was monumentally evil.
Evil, sure, but. I feel that inflation could have ended up being a lot higher if it had been a continuation of the Tory government. And because... And also in the face of the Iran war and all that kind of thing, like, I don't know, like, and again, one thing, and we shouldn't be, you know, worshipping capital in that way and all that yada yada, but I don't know, I do feel that from a neoliberal point of view, that things could have been a little worse there. Could have been a lot worse.
The impact of the Iran war not being more severe than it was is partly Trump's response, which has been to... I saw it called printing oil, which is hilarious.
Okay.
It's basically using Federal Reserve money to prop up oil prices. So okay, the fundamental problem is the same, but you're propping up the market, which if you end the war in time, can work. If you don't, just means you'll have a worse crash later.
Yeah.
But also, China has immense oil reserves. Mm. I think it's like 1.3 billion barrel versus the US's, which has a very big oil reserve, 300 million.
Mm-hmm.
So China has enormous oil reserves, and they've just been buying off oil. They've been manipulating the oil price by actually supplying oil.
So
China is sort of secretly, without saying anything about it, kind of saved the world economy, which is in their interest because we're all their customers.
Yeah.
You're not doing it out of
I mean, but also China, aren't China pivoting massively to renewables and possibly nuclear?
Their goal is to become carbon zero, but they're also building more coal-fired power stations than anybody else. Their green share is increasing, but they're also yeah, they're building more coal-fired power stations than anyone else because they need the power to build the solar panels. They are, yeah, they're sort of both.
Yeah.
But they're certainly leading green tech.
Oh, like, yeah. You know, I mean, they're the reason that solar panels have come down so much in price.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, yeah. It's really interesting to see what they're doing and where they're going. Yeah, like, I wish they weren't doing that shit with coal, to be honest, but are they doing anything with nuclear, or was I just imagining that?
Yeah. A lot of the thingy. What are the ones I was pimping to you? The thorium reactors and the salt cooled reactors and stuff. I think they're leading that stuff.
Yeah, but I've been hearing about thorium for decades now. Like,
it's real. Like, there are working thorium. I mean, there's also working. Like, I know this is the epitome of, like, it's 10 years out, but fusion.
Mm.
Like, we've had sustained fusion reactors, which are fusion reactions, which are net positive in energy. The only problem remaining is sustaining it.
Yeah,
and that's it, like, we are going to crack. I think we are going to crack that. I think anybody who puts a firm prediction on it is that we will crack that at some point, and that's going to be amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, but what does that say about humans, right? Whenever we're confronted with a crisis, we just invent our way out of it.
No, I think that's good. I think that's, like, what we are. I think you're more
pure. What's the word? Protestant about it?
No, I don't think it's Protestantism. Like, I'm pro technology when technology is employed to make lives better, and I'm pro there being more humans. I think you're a little bit anti-human.
I'm a little bit anti-human.
A little bit more like return to nature, return to a more, you know. No, I want technology. I want to exploit the planets that we inhabit, but I want to do it in a way that doesn't destroy our ability to live on them and unnecessarily wreak havoc with other life forms.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, I lean, all right, I get you. It's like in the Thief games, you've got the pagans, which are the tree people. You got the mechanites or whatever, that they're the industry people.
Yeah, I just went with the pagans because of aesthetics. Like, I hate the steampunk aesthetic, and I like their kind of vaguely Celtic kind of thing.
Are they doing a re? Oh my god, they've shelved the Deus Ex remaster, haven't they? Or got rid of it?
Oh, really? They're doing all of the Elder Scrolls and Fallout 3 are getting a remaster. I think I saw somebody posted the other day.
Okay.
When I say, well, not Morrowind, obviously, but
Okay. Well, what's the point there? But hang on, Elder Scrolls.
I don't want to remaster of Morrowind. That remaster of Oblivion looks fucking horrible.
Did I? Yeah, I think I ended up buying it on a sale. Still haven't played it.
Doing remasters for a company like Bethesda, it's different if it's a company that, like, just made this game 100 years ago and hasn't really done anything else, like, you know, make it work on modern machines, fine. But for a company like Bethesda, it's just an admission that their older games are better. So if you're acknowledging that, just make better fucking games.
I do live in the belief that there was a golden age of video games, which was about 1999 to 2010.
Oh, yeah.
No, 2010. I'll go as late as 2010.
Yeah, I'll play that, yeah.
I think the last game that might fit in that bracket is Hitman Absolution.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah,
about that. Maybe like the newer Deus Ex games.
Yeah. I mean, we do talk about this a lot, but yeah, Morrowind, Deus Ex, Half Life to an extent, Mountain Blade, like all these emergent. Yeah,
I know you'll disagree. Fallout 3 in New Vegas.
I mean, Fallout 3 for me is barely in that, but not New Vegas.
But not New Vegas.
No, for me, again, it's something we'll talk about. I'll be very brief. But for me, New Vegas is the opposite of what I liked in, like, Morrowind. It's on rails. It's BioWare, whatever they're called, Black Isle. I can't remember which one. Mm-hmm. Who was it who wrote it?
Obsidian? No, hang on, which one?
Obsidian, I think is right. It's a clunky on rails. It's not what I want. I want an open world, explorable, emergent thing.
New Vegas is totally that.
No, it's the opposite of that.
No, it is not.
It's all boring.
I did. Oh my god! Right in about when I had about three gaming channels ago, I had a series where this is one of those things I regret ever deleting and getting rid of, because it was every week I would do something. People would put in the comments something to do in Fallout New Vegas.
I remember that.
And I'd go out and do it. Yeah. And I had such fun. That was so long ago. And I'd like to do something like that again, but people don't comment on shit anymore.
No, they don't. Yeah. You've got to watch that Morrowind series that I've mentioned.
I will. Yeah,
you're gonna absolutely love it. I will guarantee it.
Cool. Right. Anyway, so we were going to talk about Oblivion, right?
Yes. Six out of ten.
6 out of 10. Okay. I'm just going to put the thing on pause and go to the toilet first because I want to debate this on an empty bladder. Okay, we're back. So you have given Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion a six out of ten.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's above 5, which means it's good.
Yeah.
But I would give it a 10, I think.
Okay. I'm going to make my case.
All right, go for it.
I'm obviously going to make my case by talking about Morrowind.
Yep.
Okay. So Morrowind has, first of all, an island of distinct cultures, some of which are very alien, some of which are very recognizable, but they all feel like they've emerged from an environment and a history. Like, they feel like actual cultures that emerge from this place and are specific and distinct to this place. Mm-hmm. Like, when you go to the Ashlanders camps, they don't use the same pottery bowls that they use over in even Balmora. They use, you know, bug shells, and, like, everything feels culturally distinct, and that's amazing to begin with. And the alienness is cool. Secondly, systemic stuff. You've got the really complicated magic system.
Mm-hmm.
Which for me defines my playthroughs. I never play a magic character, but the ability to do constant effect enchantments and just put together whatever magic effects you want, so you can be whatever kind of fucking godlike being you want to be, is amazing. And tied to that, you know, the multiple pieces of armor that you have, static leveling,
yeah,
amazing. You go to a place, this is too tough for me. Or I come up with a clever plan, a way to, you know, utilize all these things in my inventory, blah, blah, blah. There was going to be another thing that's related to that. But I can't remember. Sorry. And Oblivion just is lacking all of that. All of it. It doesn't have any of it. So Morrowind's a 10, and Oblivion lacks all of that stuff. And the only thing that Oblivion brings that Morrowind doesn't have is well-written guild quests. And there's only really a series of 5 quests that are it's, you know, it's the latter end of the Thieves Guild. Dark Brotherhood, not bad. Thieves Guild, the end portion, amazing. Better than anything in Morrowind in terms of writing of the guild quests. But Morrowind has like 14 guilds you can join. Oblivion has 3. 3 or 4?
There's the Dark Brotherhood, Fighters, Mages, Thieves. There's also things like Umbercano's quest.
It's a quest line, though. Morrowind does that stuff too. It's got the vampires. Yeah. It's got, yeah. So, but in terms of joinable guilds, Morrowind has loads of them.
Let's see. Joinable. Do you want? Well, there's a list of joinable guilds that you get.
Yeah, on UESP.
And there's loads.
I mean, some of them are joinable, but you've only got a couple of factions, like the Twin Lamps. But
technically joinable. You just do things for them. Okay, all right. Here's UESP list of guilds, right? So you got the Arena. That's, you know.
Yeah.
I like that semi-camp. I like the Arena because it lets you level up like really early on, so you can get a few.
Yeah, I always, first thing I do is go to the Arena. Yeah, do all the fights. Yeah.
Dark Brotherhood, Fighters Guild, Mages Guild, Thieves Guild. So they're the major guilds.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got the Blackwood Company. They're a plot thing, really, aren't they?
Isn't that a DLC thing?
No, it's not a DLC thing. It's
the opposite of the Fighters Guild. The opposite of the Fighters.
You join them undercover as part of the Fighters Guild quests.
That doesn't count.
Doesn't count. No, sorry. The Blades.
doesn't count.
The Court of Madness, which is the DLC. DLC for
That doesn't play like a joinable faction. That plays like you are just playing through the story of the DLC.
Okay. Oh, so, well, that would also count then the Knights of the Nine.
Yeah, so same deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's the Knights of the Thorn, but they don't really have any quests. There's the Knights of the White Stallion. There's the Mythic Dawn. They're not really a quest either. There's the Nine Divines. You may join this faction with the Knights of the Nine official download. Order of the Dragon. You are induced to this after completing the main quest. Order of the Virtuous Blood. An Order of Vampire Hunters in the Imperial City, which I think is a legitimate minor faction. So there's like one extra. Okay. So all right, okay.
Oblivion has fewer. Their quest lines aren't as long, by not even close. Not as bad as Skyrim, but nowhere near as long as Morrowind. But in a short section, they're far better written. So there's that. Okay, factions in Morrowind. House Lalu, House Redoran, House Tel'vani.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth House, not joinable. Blades, doesn't count. Sense of Nexus, you can't join. Dark Brotherhood, East Empire Company, joinable in Blood Moon. Fighters Guild, Imperial Cult, Imperial Knights, not joinable. Imperial Legion, Mages Guild, Thieves Guild, Ashlanders, Kimonotong, not
joinable. Hang on, how do you join the Ashlanders? Is that the main quest?
That's during the main quest, yeah. So that's equivalent to some of the Oblivion ones.
Okay.
Neverine doesn't really count. Tribunal, Twin Lamps, the three vampire clans. So all of those with like significant quest lines.
Do you know I've never actually done the vampire quest in Morrowind?
They're all right. It's a pain in the ass being a vampire in Morrowind.
Yeah.
The other little thing. I think the thing about the Ashlanders using like beetle shells and this place using pottery pots and this place using wooden bowls is really important. Because in Oblivion, everybody's got the same fucking pots and plates and everything. And that's boring. And it's a more homogenous culture, fair enough, but it's boring. But then on top of that, when you're questing, when you're out in a dungeon in Morrowind, there's always the chance, and it's often the case, that you will just find just like something really powerful. Like, I know in the very early, it just came up in that Morrowind playthrough, in the very early main quest thing, when you're first asked to go to a sixth house base thing,
yeah,
it's where you catch Corpus. Just behind, it's hidden. Like there's a like one of those sixth house trough things with a bunch of loot in it. And then behind them, so you're only going to see it if you sort of shimmy around this wall and you know look really hard. Is the I can't remember what they're called, Gloves of Rangolf or something. And like one of them is constant effect plus 20 strength, and one of them is constant effect plus 20 agility, which is enormous. And in Oblivion, in Morrowind, all over the place, those kind of things. Like most of the major dungeons you go in, you'll find something like really powerful. And even if it's not useful to you, you can sell it for an enormous amount. In Oblivion, neither of those things is true. There's no powerful artifact. And nothing is worth much, which doesn't matter so much because you can't do the enchanting, which is what you need the money for in Morrowind. But it's just a poorer game overall. It's got a couple of high points where it exceeds Morrowind, but in like 90% of what we enjoy about Morrowind, Oblivion's weaker, smaller, lacking. And so, like, certainly the capped. Like, I think speed is capped and jumping is capped. And you know, in Morrowind, I can be a god that literally leaps, you know, over the entire island. And in Oblivion, the best you can do is like, I can Michael Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So I play a lot of this with role playing in mind, which you don't do so much. You're more of a power player. So I do like all that stuff with Morrowind, and but when I'm playing through with Oblivion. I'm not saying that it's better that they've leveled and put the guardrails on so many things. Like they've put the guardrails on training, for example, where you
the training thing, but in terms of the dynamic leveling, it's not that I don't mind dynamic leveling. I think there's an argument to be made both ways. I think I lean static leveling, but there's an argument to be made both ways. The problem is they did it so badly. The problem is that the optimum way to play is to not fucking level. Which just means that's a bad design.
But the thing is, the more you don't level, then the longer it takes to get to the next level, right? So for example, say you never go
to... The optimal way to play is never to level above level one.
Sort of.
Just increase your skills.
Yeah, but then you never increase your attributes.
No, but you become a god, which you can't do in Oblivion by leveling up.
I mean, that's a very boring way to play, though.
It's very boring. It's a very min-maxy way to play, but it shows how broken the fundamental design is. Like, they fucked up the dynamic leveling. Even just playing Oblivion normally, unless you really know what you're doing, you feel weaker when you level up. On your first playthrough, the higher you level, the enemies are outpacing you in strength,
Because you are also leveling your lot picking and your restoration, whatever. Yeah. All right. You know, I mean, those are all, you know, fair criticisms, but I get 10 out of 10's worth of fun out of that game. I'm sorry to say, you know, like.
I mean, I've had so much fun with Morrowind, but there's like the amount of fun you're having in the moment, and then there's the length of time you're having that fun for. In Oblivion, I probably had as much fun ish as I had in Morrowind in the moment, but for a much shorter time before you see the edges. And
There's like this orders of magnitude more to do in Morrowind, but I mean, I'm not making a defense of the game creators or anything like this when I say this, but who with Morrowind, right, especially nowadays, who would have played all of that stuff when it, you know, if that's a lot of gameplay for, like, how many people are going to be playing all of that? That's a lot of work.
No, it doesn't matter, because that's part of why it's great, because whatever way you slice it, whatever your particular slice through the game is, it's seeing different shit, and it's all cool. Whereas Oblivion, my playthrough and your playthrough are going to be, like, much, much, much more similar than they are in Morrowind, as particularly as a first player.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are playing the Morrowind, I should name it. It's called, I think it's called Unguided Morrowind.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise is the dude, he's not looking in the wiki. He's not reading. He's going in completely blind, and he's not looking anything up fundamentally.
Yeah.
So he's playing it how we played it back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, what was I saying? What was my point?
Difference in gameplay.
Oh, and he's like, I think he sounds like from the things he's saying, he's in like his 20s at most, like young 20s, I would say, early 20s at most.
Yeah,
the kids are loving Morrowind, and there's lots of young people in the comments saying this game's amazing. You know, it's Morrowind they're going to, not Oblivion.
Is he playing Open MW?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's...
I had something else to say.
Bethesda should let OpenMW in on the Steam store and just give them a you know, green light.
Yeah, just make it cool. I mean, it's in the same way that some games on Steam just package emulators, open source emulators. You can do it. Like, there's nothing stopping them just packaging. Well,
Iron Storm, I think it was.
But that would mean they couldn't resell and remaster if they ever do.
Well, you still need the assets. It's just like they could do what they did with Deus Ex. Remastered, what's the remaster called? The reloaded revision.
Yeah.
Is it? Basically, Ion Storm or whoever gave them the green light and said, yeah, you know, you can have that on Steam. Mm. And they gave them the okay. So it can be done. But with OpenMW specifically.
They're just so penny pinching.
You still need to buy the assets. Tell them you still need to buy the assets. Just let them.
We still need to buy the game, but. If they put Open Morrowind as the default way to run Morrowind on Steam, there's less of an argument for the remaster. Because, you know, part of the problem is, like, Morrowind itself runs like shit on modern computers. You know, you really need, especially on Windows, you really need Open Morrowind to even run it.
So why would it be against their interest?
That was my point. In recent years, I have leaned, partly your arguments, partly like Anju, and partly just, you know, playing it a bit, I've leaned more towards Oblivion, right? More positively towards Oblivion, and it's largely watching this playthrough and watching somebody experience it for the first time and be amazed by the stuff that isn't in subsequent games that's made me realize no, Morrowind is actually fun, because you kind of forget it when you're in such. Morrowind is special and Oblivion isn't.
Morrowind is special, like everything you're saying about Morrowind I completely 110% agree with you, right? But Oblivion is okay. So there are some big faults with Oblivion. Big faults, right? Everyone looks the same, and there's like three voice actors doing the lot, right? Yeah. That brings me out of the immersion so much, right? It's like a pantomime or some sort of school play where you've got three kids doing all of the bits, right? And you put on some different clothes.
Eddie Murphy film.
Yes. It's an Eddie Murphy film. The leveling, yeah, you're right there with the leveling. You know, like, and there are mods that change it about a bit.
See, all of that stuff is true, but for me, that's far less important than just the paucity of the world, of the, you know, stuff to do, stuff to find, and the paucity of the system. That's the big thing for me.
It's just a smaller world.
No, it's not just smaller. It's smaller and poorer. Like, there's no interesting artifacts to find. There's no really, like, there's a few, but not as many weird, interesting little quests, weird cultures, not as much to play with mechanically. Like, that magic system is amazing, morally. As a non-magic player, which is, you know, that in itself is stunning. Because, yeah, the thing they tried to... So in Morrowind, you've got your constant effect enchantments, which you tailor exactly to what you want, and there's endless combinations. And in Oblivion...
Which I don't do that.
You don't do that?
Generally, no.
That's the thing I aim for. Like, when I've got all my constant effect enchantments in place, that's when the game begins. Which is, like, 200 hours in. Oblivion, they replace it with the sigil stones, which are you go into this boring fucking Oblivion. Oh, God. If you play through, do you even open the Oblivion gates? Because I just don't, because it's horrible.
I speedrun them.
Exactly.
I did do. I have done playthroughs where every time I come across the Oblivion gate, I'll close it. Oh, and God, I got so good at speedrunning them, though. But you can. The thing is, okay, this is one of those games where you try with the boringness of... Okay, yeah, the Oblivion gates, close the Oblivion gates. The fact that they've only got like 8 of them or something like that, and you're literally playing the same level again and again and again.
Yeah.
I don't know who thought that was a good fucking idea. All right, I will grant you on that. However,
Because the equivalent in Morrowind is like, a tomb. And it was just like Andaro ancestral tomb. And it's just a tomb. They've all got the same architecture. But every single one of those was exciting.
Yeah, they were different. They were interesting. There was things about them.
Even when there was nothing really in there, it was like the potential that there might be something in there. Whereas in Oblivion, after about 50 hours, you're like, oh, there is no loot in this game. It's just get the next tier of weapon. That's all there is.
Mm. When you get to certain levels of skills, and when you get to certain levels of maybe enchantments and gear and that kind of stuff, you can do those Oblivion gates in less than a minute.
Oh, yeah.
You can jump over boundaries,
But that's not an argument. The fact that you're essentially skipping content isn't an argument for the content, right?
Well, it is when you've played it, when it expects you to do it literally 100 times.
Even your first time, the Oblivion gates are fucking boring.
Yeah.
The very first time you go into one, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Every subsequent, like literally the second time is when you're like, oh, the exact same thing again?
Yeah, it would have...
The high points are... Some of the quests are really... I mean, Morrowind has its version of this, but they are weaker, I would say. But, like, top of my head, I think it's a Mage's Guild quest where you get trapped in a painting.
Oh, that's not a Mage's Guild quest. That's just a random quest.
Oh, it's just a random quest. Like, that's cool. That's really fucking cool.
And some of those quests, each village... But each town has one or two of those random quests, and they're often really good.
Off. There's a couple of dozen of really interesting individual quests in Oblivion. Whereas Morrowind is very much a barbarian stole my clothes or fetch this from here. But the relationship I felt, especially the first time through, the relationship I felt with the guild people giving me the missions. Like, because when you came back to them, you didn't even mention the lack of map markers. That's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. But when you went on a mission, and it was always like you always got distracted or lost, and it always felt like a fucking journey when you got back. Mm-hmm. And then you talk to your guild master, and you're like, I did it. And they're like, that's fucking awesome. Here's your next thing. Like, you've got to do this. Like, they felt, even though they didn't have voice acting and it's all just text, they felt far more like people, and I felt far more of a relationship with them.
Yeah. Well,
but. I was trying to be positive about Oblivion, but like the painting quest is really cool. There's nothing like that in Morrowind.
I mean, we've been playing Esoteric Ebb, which is a non-voiced story game, and it's so much easier for me at least. But I assume you feel the same, to associate with the characters or when it's just text, when you don't have
it should be the other way around, but it's not.
I'm sure it would be the other way around if they put in the necessary work to do it, which is unreasonable.
You've got the problem of, like, you can't skim voice text. You can't skim voice acting. I can skim text. I can read it at my own pace, which means I'm more likely to properly take it in.
Mm.
Whereas if it's voice, I'll just zone out, or I'll walk off and go for a piss, or get like, wait until the fucking voice is.
Yeah, but also with Oblivion in particular, when you've got the three voice actors... It really is just three. They don't even have one for their own each race, you know?
I do love that. There's that one. I think it's an alchemist Dunmer lady where they kept in the, yeah. Oh, I messed that up. I'll do that again. Okay.
Yeah.
Hello, traveler.
Oh, that's a classic.
Even, yeah, the fact that it's got more voice acting but feels, because Morrowind, you go, like, at the start, you walk through the town and people will just say throwaway things to you, like, oh, you piece of, you know, you're a piece of shit. What are you doing here? That, you know, something along those lines. And then, like, when you've got your fancy clothes on and you're powerful later on, they're like, Outlander, you flatter us with your attention. You know, like,
yeah.
And that, you feel a change. You feel that, oh, people like me now. I never felt that in Oblivion.
They do say things like that in Oblivion.
Yeah, but it never hits somebody. I mean, they tried to do it in Skyrim with, you know, I took an arrow to the knee and all that. Fuck it. You look. I can't remember. It was, what was the? Because it was like, if your strength was high, they were like, oh, you've got big muscles.
Yeah.
But then if your intelligence was high, they were like, oh, you look like you're good at reading. They didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You look like you could jump high.
Yeah. You're a sneaky looking sort. That's one in Oblivion.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a sneaky looking sort, you're bad at stealth.
Mm. Yeah, it's. They do it with all skills, don't they? They go, oh, I hope you can teach me some alchemy sometime.
Yeah.
It's,
and even, this goes back to, I think the alienness is a big part of it as well in Morrowind. The fact that it's not just medieval Europe, it's something other than that. And just the, like, you know, Enwar, I can't remember the other, but like the specific Morrowindy invented words that just make it feel like a place you're entering rather than just, oh, it's a Ren Faire.
Yeah. And I liked also how distinct Mournhold was to Vardenfell.
Yeah. Which was again, first time through, because I just thought the island was Morrowind. You don't know the lore. You know, back in whatever, I didn't know the lore. I was like, oh, Morrowind is bigger than... That's Vardenfell. This is Morrowind. Like, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, and I don't... I think the DLCs fall down a little... Well, they don't fall down... I don't know. I liked Mournhold as a destination. I think the main quest in it was a bit of a chore.
Tribunal felt like a chore. Blood Moon was a lot better.
Yeah, Blood Moon was okay. Yeah, and you had the, oh yeah, and it finished with the hunt. You know, the great hunt.
The werewolf hunting. Yeah. And before that, you get to build a little settlement.
I loved that at the time. I thought that was that was groundbreaking.
Also, again, and I mean, this is mechanical again, but like the dice rolls versus the more arcadey style combat. I know this is a subject of contention, but the good thing about the dice rolls is your character is getting better at something. Whereas without the dice rolls, your character, like, yeah, your skill goes up, which means you're doing more damage, but you don't feel like, you don't feel that same sense of like starting from nothing and becoming like a fucking god. Neither end of that is there. It's all in the middle. But, and this goes against that, because I prefer, like, for example, the lock picking in Morrowind, where it's just like click, 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 dice roll. I prefer that to the little mini game. Lock picking, but the persuasion game in Oblivion, I fucking love. I know.
Yes, I do.
I really enjoy it. It's so stupid.
No, and yeah, I'm totally with you on that one. I don't know why I like the persuasion minigame.
I just love. First, it's fun. It's fun. It's a fun little mental puzzle. But I love the absurdity of, in order to make somebody like you, you have to, in the right order, insult them, praise them, intimidate them.
Tell them a joke.
Your mum's a cunt, your shoes look nice, I'm going to fucking punch you. And they're like, you're such a nice person.
I never got the hang of the lock picking, by the way. Like, I never quite could rely on it.
Yeah, I sometimes felt like I did, but then in my next sitting, I'd be terrible. And I think it was just like, my reactions were good that day or something
something like that, I guess. But I just bought shitloads of lockpicks and just went auto.
Yeah.
You can get through anything with enough dice rolls.
In Skyrim, when it's this kind of lockpicking that's in every fucking game now, I literally just installed a mod that just had a green area where you needed to put it. I couldn't be fucked with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mind it when they brought it in with the Fallout games, but I don't, beyond, you know.
There's more thought put into it in the Fallout games. It was a better, they were better little mini games, and they fit better into that thing. Like the hacking one was really fun. That was an actual. If you're going to do a mini game, make it a puzzle, not just a trial and error type thing.
Damn, I do like Fallout New Vegas. To be fair, and the Fallout 3, not the ones before that, and not the ones after that. That was the golden era of Fallout.
Yeah.
I think.
I think Fallout 3 has got enormous weaknesses, but they both have enormous
weaknesses.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about the games that we love so much is that we love them often in spite of, or sometimes because of, enormous weaknesses.
No, 100%. And maybe this is a bit bullshit, but it's the kind of weaknesses were generally things that, like, for example, it's not really an example of a weakness, but like the lack of voice acting, why that's good fundamentally is because it lets your imagination do more. Mm. Anytime a game or any fictional thing lets your imagination, I mean, horror films know this, good horror films, or, you know, Jaws or Spielberg, you know, you don't show the fucking monster because your imagination is doing more powerful things than, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Morrowind leads, as they progress, they're far less about letting your imagination do it.
Yeah. When I first played, and I never finished it because it's too scary, the game Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
I think I bailed out. That
one. I didn't stop it because it was scary. I stopped it because, well, it was scary. I stopped enjoying it basically. But you start, and I'm not a big horror games person, but you go into this mansion, it's creaky, it's scary, you hear all these noises. At one point, I was hiding under a table waiting for something to walk past. Once I'd actually seen the monsters, it was just a running away game as far as I was concerned.
Exactly that. Yeah, that's exactly it.
That game could have been a fifth of the length, and you should never have seen a monster in it. Or maybe like right at the very, very end.
It's specific to people like us, though. I think the people that like horror, they want that as well. They want both parts. Whereas for me and you, at that point, it's shed its whatever.
As
you say, it becomes
a but game. Horror games are not a genre for me, so I'm not going to put the wheels to right on that one because, I get scared too easily from video games. Films, not so much, but video games, because you have to confront the thing that's scary.
You're actually there. You're not watching somebody there. Mm. You are there. Yeah, 100%.
It makes all the difference. It's a bit like books. I actually get quite scared by horror books.
I've read horror books.
I used to read books about aliens when I was quite young. Terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying it was. Because it's one of those things.
Have you ever been made to jump by a book?
No, I don't think I've been made to jump.
Once in my entire life. And I made me jump and then I laughed at myself.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember. Something very, very tense, and then somebody bursts in or something.
it was. Well, the thing is, it was aliens were the thing that was I found them scary in particular because it was like this could happen to anyone at any time. They could just show up and fuck with you. Like,
No, I'm terrified of aliens. I didn't know you shared that.
Only in a book sense of the word. When I'm like awake and alive in the world and this kind of thing.
For me, it's from the film Communion.
I've not seen that.
Which, again, it's not a very good film, but it's about a dude who's just in this remote house in the woods, and he's previously been abducted and he's scared of alien. And then there's just a little, it's like paper, it's terrible special effects, like papier-mâché, but this alien face, like nighttime outside, you know, you can't see out, but they can see in kind of thing. And just an alien face just like emerges at the side of the window, and that haunts my fucking life.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what it is about it.
Yeah, it's those little things that just like pick at your brain in a very specific way. In fact, oh god, I can't believe I'm gonna fucking say it. No, I'm not gonna say it. I was gonna talk about Human Centipede.
Say it, I'll put the kettle on.
The second Human Centipede film is the horror one. So the first one is like the Silence of the Lamb era thriller. The second one is like creaky horror, and the third one is South Park comedy. And but it's not scary because it's so absurd. So I was gonna say that's a horror that doesn't. But also, it did scare me. It made me yelp out loud. because it was just so gory. Like, there was a particular element.
Well, a lot of the popular horror films now, it's all about the jump scares, right?
Yeah,
I hate the idea. Yeah. Jump scares. And I think there's two kinds of broadly, there's two kinds of being scared. There's the and there's the very tense, like psychological. That's the worst one.
Yeah.
That's the harder one to do, and it's by far the worst one.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that Human Centipede 2 does it well. It horrifies you in how disgusting it is. That's all.
Well, that's the third kind, actually. Grotesque.
That's it.
Like, revulsion is it's kind of horror as well.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously, well, I would say shock. There is revulsion and disgust, lots of it in all of the Human Centipede movies. But shock, when you just see something that shocking.
Yeah. A lot of body horror goes in that. Like, I can't watch body horror because it's just far too effective on me. It's just like, I can't watch that.
Okay, here's an interesting one. So I've never played this game, but I've kind of wanted to. I think I own it, but I always watched it through gameplay videos. And it's called Detroit Beyond Human. It's a David Cage game. And David Cage usually gets laughed out of the room, really. You know, like, he's not generally...
It's split. Like, I think, like, the Edge crowd love him.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is like, that's pretentious wankery. And I think... It is pretentious wankery, but I agree. Detroit Human thing does look interesting.
And also, there are so many branching paths in that game. Like, I looked under the hood, as it were, and looked at all the various YouTubers and all that were doing that were breaking down all the paths. There are so many, more than I don't think any other game. If this happens and that happens and that person's still alive and this person like has
a little. Did you ever play Omicron: The Nomad Soul?
No,
it was a thingy game from way back David Bowie was a character in the game.
Oh,
and also he specifically wrote songs that his character performs in the game. But one of the things you could do in the game is you could take over other people's bodies. And this is like, I think it was late 90s, so it's it's 3D, but relatively crude. But when you took over somebody's body, you could go back to their house, go into their house, look through all their stuff. And I got such a fucking voyeuristic kick from doing that. I would just take over everybody I could find and just go back to their houses and look at their shit. And like, I probably had like 100 plus hours in that game, and it was I barely progressed the plot. I was just taking over people's bodies and going through. And Detroit Thingy Human, like, seems like it has something of that to it.
It's, yeah, I mean, I brought it up because the body horror in it is quite interesting.
Right.
Because it's done with androids. So there's lots of like, there's like a wall of arms and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of like, it's creepy, but not in a shocking way. It does seem like a legit, like, I don't know, fun, interesting game, but not like a good game or a game that I'd be too proud to be like, oh, I really,
Maybe we should Space Virgins it.
Yeah. Well, like, or, interesting. Choose a story game. We could all play it together.
I could all play together and then talk about it. All play it, like, have a minimum length that you have to play it for, like 10, 20 hours or something, and then...
Yeah. Yeah, I do kind of want to see how I'd go about it, because it's quite... It's generally seen as David Cage's best game, but it's also generally understood that David Cage had the least amount to do with it, so...
which is why it's his best game. what was his first sort of one that got people's attention? Something Hard Rain or Something Rain?
Oh, Heavy Rain, I think, was that.
That was horrible.
That was so. Well, the one before that was Fahrenheit 9/11, was it?
I don't think I know that one.
That was the one. I had a friend who played that with on console, and I went around to her house and we just hung out, smoked weed, and played this game. When I was
those kind of games, right?
Yeah, when I was like, I must have been like 16 or something. And I think it was Fahrenheit 9/11. And it was, at the time, and maybe the weed had something to do with this, it was excellent. Fahrenheit 9/11 is the Michael Moore
Yeah.
Documentary.
451 is the Ray Bradbury book. So it's another number.
Indigo Prophecy. Fahrenheit, okay. Indigo.
Okay.
Okay. No, wait. In Indigo Prophecy, Fahrenheit, also known as Indigo Prophecy in North America.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, Quantic Dream, David Cage, yeah.
Because Nomad Soul was Quantic Dream.
Yeah. It won some awards. I don't know if these awards mean anything. Develop Industry Excellence Awards, Best New PCIP, won that. It won the Navguitar Awards for Original Adventure and Writing in a Drama. Well, that must have been a tough year, 2006. it's one of those games. Okay, it's one of those games that I much prefer to watch played on YouTube than to actually play it myself.
Yeah. Partly
because the mechanics are a bit tedious. There are elements of the game that are just like find 5 items in the apartment and make a pizza or whatever. But the actual story itself, I'm not even going to say that was good. You fight the internet at one point, it's just like for no reason. It's just like, oh, there's a and I saw Heavy Rain get played through as well, and that was just sad. Was it sad? Or is it just like? Yeah. It's just like, oh, let's make this deep and a deep experience by harming little boys.
Oh, is that what? I can't remember. I just remember it being if you want to do that kind of thing, just make a film.
David Cage always wanted. No, yeah, this is David Cage. Couldn't crack it in film. But of course, we substantially differ on Long Live the Queen, don't we? Because I that's one of my favorite games. That's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, no, it's not like I think it's a bad game. It's just not for me. Like, I recognize its quality, and I recognize what you enjoy about it. It's not that I think it's shit. Yeah,
that might be one we should play together one day.
Yeah, I'll see.
Because I've only got about half of all the full achievements, which is really a lot.
We should do a session of that, and then the session of the version of that idea that I like. Volcano Princess is probably the current iteration.
Oh, yeah. There's also a new, spiritual successor to Long Live the Queen, but I haven't actually got that yet.
What's that one called?
I don't know. It's called, like, Cosmic Princess or something like that. Long Live the Queen...
I may have looked at that and thought of that as more of a... I think that might be more of a Princess Maker one if I'm thinking of the same.
Galaxy Princess Zorana. Yeah. Like the original Long Live the Queen, which was an incredibly difficult life sim that involved keeping a young princess turned queen alive long enough to rule her kingdom, the sequel Galaxy Princess Zorana follows a new ruler coming into her own after her celestial emperor father dies. Zorana needs to learn about her past, handle her schedule, grow stronger in important stats, deal with advisors, mystics, and rivals, and hopefully survive. As in the original, our decisions as players shape the heroine. This means her personality changes, and she may end up being good or evil. Sounds pretty good to me.
Actually, I think for my version, I think I'd make you just play the original Princess Maker 2.
Could be a laugh. Well, I'll tell you what. Are we wrapping up soon? Oh, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so Oblivion, what I will say is I don't necessarily disagree. Like, I remember at the time reading one of the magazine articles that was tearing apart Oblivion as well. And going, look, I can't actually fault the criticism you leveled against it, but I'm still going to throw hundreds of hours into this game.
And I mean, I don't think we disagree. It's not like we have a disagreement about its substance. You enjoy it more than I do. And I enjoy it quite a lot.
I will tolerate that it's a smaller world. You know, the crockery doesn't bother me as much. But I get it.
Yeah.
You get that with other games. You get that, like, with Deus Ex Invisible War, where you go to Egypt and they're using the same crockery as Detroit.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that being a modern setting papers over that a little bit, I think.
Is this one crockery company for the whole world?
I mean, go to Mozambique and they're wearing Nike and Adidas.
I can agree that it works in Invisible War to that degree because it's hyper capitalism. Is it hyper cap? I don't know. We need to replay that one again as well.
Yeah, we do. We need to get to that
because that's. Yeah, because that was that's a 10 out of 10 game for me, is Invisible War.
Yeah, yeah,
And again, has its faults, consolified to a degree, and yes, you can say that the original Deus was better, but they're still both 10 out of 10s. Although I think
the difference there is there are distinct ways in which the first game is better, for sure, but there are also distinct ways in which the second game is better. And because it was very early in consolification, it's not too heavy.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. With Oblivion, so... this is going to sound a bit ridiculous. The graphics jumped up substantially and made that... I know you like your shallower draw distance, but the fact that you had distant textures in Oblivion was mind-blowing to me.
I agree. At the time, when I first ran Oblivion, I was like, this is amazing. This is such a jump up.
Mm.
If you run them now, though, I think Morrowind looks better. I think... Because Morrowind now, because of how low poly it is and how many sort of like shortcuts it's taking, looks stylized. Whereas if you play Oblivion now, it's closer to what we have now, but so far away that it just looks bad. Like when you emerge, first time you emerge from that sewer and you look at the, you know, the distant land, it's just blurry, blotchy. Like it just looks like the textures haven't loaded and the, you know, the LOD models haven't loaded. Whereas if you play Morrowind, it looks stylized.
But also OpenMW does a lot to improve the graphics.
I don't do any of that. I do the water, or I leave the water on whatever their default is, but I don't do anything. I do like the fog. Morrowind, the sky in Morrowind is beautiful. And some landscapes, when you find, you know, one of those Telvanni mushroom houses, like, it can look beautiful at times in a way that Oblivion looked impressive, but it never looked beautiful. Nothing looked beautifully designed in Oblivion.
Yes. No, I get that. I get that, and you're right. And having the distant textures on Oblivion made the world feel smaller, because you could literally see the Imperial City from wherever. But I don't think that was a bad thing, because I think it was a little bit of a metaphor for it being the center of the realm, right? Like...
No, again, it's not a thing. It's purely a taste thing. This, I don't think it's not right versus wrong. I prefer, it makes it feel small in a bad way for me. For you appreciate it.
I mean, I liked also in Morrowind, where having Dagoth's volcano hanging over the island was very powerful. Like, I thought
you have that anyway. You very early learn where that is, but.
But seeing it just like as you're out and about.
Yeah. And I think if they made it now, if it was made now, not by Bethesda, by competent people, you know, the same fundamental game made with today's technology, that would be an ever-present thing that you could always see.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So I like the distant textures on Morrowind. Obviously, that was a technical limitation, because, to be honest, even putting... When you can set the settings of the distance, you can max out any machine, because I think... If you were willing to like go all out, you could like load every single thing
entire game into memory, essentially. Yeah.
So I don't know how much memory that would take. Would it be in graphical memory or just RAM?
I don't know how that stuff works.
Maybe. I mean, it'd have to process, because it says there's a setting that says if something is smaller than 2 pixels or whatever, don't render it. Like, if it's that far away, that it's... Which is a clever way of doing it, because technically
just reminded me of how big Deus Ex file saves get.
How big?
I think they hadn't worked out... Like, what was eventually worked out is that... So, okay, in Deus Ex, I think they just saved the state of every level that you'd been in, as in they saved... Because you can move objects around and stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
And destroy... I think you destroy, destroy doors and stuff.
Yeah.
So they just saved the level in the save file, where, and then later on they realized, no, we don't need to save the entire level. We just need to save what's changed. a delta. Yeah. So Deus Ex for the time, Deus Ex saved games get absolutely fucking enormous when you're late into the game.
Does that change now? Did they like redefine it, or is it done in? Yeah.
It's fundamental to the engine. I think they're still enormous.
Okay, like 200 megabytes towards the end, right?
Yeah, literally just every level in the game saved into the,
Yeah.
There's also, I remember hearing this years ago, I don't know if this still applies, but back in the days when the two engines were Quake and Unreal, like every game virtually, you know, 3D game was based on Quake or Unreal. There was a fundamental philosophical difference between these two engines in that I can't remember which way around it was, so I'll just say it one way. In the Quake engine, space was empty, and you added volume, like you added, you know, walls. And in the Quake engine, it was the other way around. Space was volume, and you carved out the level.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I find that really interesting, like positive versus negative space.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything when you're playing the game, but it's an interesting philosophical
distinction. Yeah, I played a lot with the Duke Nukem level editor, and they do...
Was that Quake, I think, right?
3D Realms. I think, well, it was the one where space was volume and you carved out the level.
Okay.
So that, but didn't it use its own engine or something?
I don't know. It would have been before Quake, wasn't it? Duke Nukem, actually. So I guess it was.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know which it was.
I don't know. I quite enjoyed it, and I really. I'm disappointed that Ion Storm ended up being
anti-trans stuff.
Yeah,
that was disappointing.
And also, like, I can't play it lovingly anymore. Like, it's just
I can't return to. I know some people can, like Hamish certainly can, but like game forms that like I never replayed Duke Nukem, so putting that aside. Mm. But I played Ion Storm before the, you know, anti-trans stuff came out. And I was like, that's really fun. This is what games used to be like.
Mm.
And I'll enjoy it for like half an hour, but then never go back to it. Because it's like, things have moved on.
Mm.
Like, I just, that is, for me, that is a thing of the past. And I can't go, like, games on the Commodore 64 that I enjoyed at the time, I can't play them now. They're fucking crude.
I feel like that about a lot of games, yeah. That's why I think games maybe before 99.
Yeah, similarly for me. Like the first game, like, I mean, I grew up in the generation where, you know, home computers were very first a thing.
Mm.
So we had, you know, Commodore 64s with like essentially arcadey games for the most part. And I played them and they were fun, but I never really loved, like the first game that I loved was Populous.
Okay. Was that strategy? I don't even know what Populous is.
Yeah, it's a god game.
Yeah,
you build up your land and make your castles and then charge all your men at the enemy men and
that looks kind of cool. It's almost kind of, is it similar of the era of Transport Tycoon? Not train. What's the train one? Train Tycoon.
Yeah. TTD, isn't it? Transport Tycoon.
No. The one, the Sid Meier's train, the train one. Train
Tycoon. No.
Train. Tycoon? Is that original? I don't know. What's train Tycoon?
Broadly in the same, in the sense that you're managing something abstracted away from it, yeah.
Mm.
Broadly the same kind of thing. But yeah, games were very throwaway for me before that, so I don't have a particular nostalgia or desire to return. Mm. They weren't clever. Populous was the first game that I played that was clever.
Railroad Tycoon.
Right, yeah.
That was it. And is that a Sid Meier's one? Sid Meier's Railroad Tycoon. That's it. Yeah. Although this version, yes, that's the one. So it's like the real blocky one, the original. Oh God, that's ancient.
Show me.
I'll put a. Yeah. Let's see. Copy image link. Oops, that's the wrong. Someone's almost. There we go. That's
That looks like Civ 1.
God, in my head, that looks more beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. No, the real astonishing one for that for me is Gran Turismo 1 on the PlayStation. Because when I played that in the 90s, that was literally photorealistic. And I had conversations with my flatmate at the time going like, games can never look more... This is photorealism. Games can never look more... Like, this literally... I would mistake this for reality. And you look at it now, and it's fucking hilarious.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, I used to like playing Screamer Rally, which is also probably hasn't.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, I do dip into it from time to time. And actually, I do kind of weirdly enjoy it.
What, Screamer Rally?
Yeah, the original.
Yeah.
Or two.
Yeah, is it Screamer Rally 2? I like a rally game, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, and of course, Flat Out, legendary. Well, Flat That's Out too.
Mm-hmm. Need to get back on that scoreboard.
Need to work that one out. Just before we go, one thing I have been thinking about and working out that I kind of want to run, like, want thoughts on from not just yourself but anyone that's watching. Right, I've recently been taking to doing shorts again, like making shorts videos, and I go in and out of like phases where I kind of like making these like 3 minutes or less vertical videos. Obviously, like, you know, you get them on your Instagrams and your TikToks, you've got YouTube shorts. And then I've thrown up a few on Loops, which is the Fediverse short form video platform. And the ones I've been doing lately have been little clips from the podcast that me, Jenny and Max do on Game of Thrones. Mm. And it has absolutely... No, we never did this podcast for any kind of exposure or anything like that. We like making it. We like it, but the distinction between the number of people that like the shorts but don't have any interest in the podcast is quite staggering.
Yeah,
and which actually kind of makes sense, especially with me, Jenny, Max. We just rabbit on similar. Like it's, you know, it's not.
It's just a time thing, isn't it? People, you know, waiting at a bus stop, they're going to watch three or four shorts, not start, you know, the first 10 minutes of a
three-hour podcast. Long, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like it's given me thought about like the, and I know I don't like, there's a part of me that's like, am I, because I, my ideal like online video that I like making is the relatively short or, well, like I like the podcasty stuff. That's great. But then there's like the shorter like video game video stuff that's 16:9 and you'd watch it at a computer, like the good old YouTube days. And I feel like I'm a little too nostalgic for that realm that might not exist anymore, of having, you know, when you couldn't upload a video longer than 10 or 15 minutes on YouTube when it was... You know, and I think is the thing that I'm trying to capture, is that now, does that nowadays exist as a vertical video on people's phones? 3 minutes, you can do a lot in 3 minutes. That's, you know, I know that you disagree on that one, Drew, because you like your 3 hour stuff.
When I'm searching for a video to watch on YouTube, if it's under 2 hours, I'm like, what's the point? you can't say anything in under 2 hours.
Yeah.
I don't disdain shorts at all. Like it's purely a taste thing. Mm. I don't think they're destroying culture. I think the algorithms that some of the apps use are destroying our brains. Yeah. But shorts in themselves, we've always had short form content. There's nothing wrong with short form content. It's not. Yeah. There's nothing inherently lesser about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I have had thought. Well, the thing is as well, is that even people I know like the shorts for the Game of Thrones stuff, who don't really care to spend 3 hours on the podcast. Yeah, they're like, oh, you know, your thoughts here and here, you know, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't want to have such a high opinion of myself as going, well, you like the 1 minute version, why not like the 10 hour version? You know, like maybe my some of the stuff that I do needs substantial distillation and refinement. But I was thinking about doing an entire Hitman walkthrough of Hitman Blood Money, classic game. That's 10 out of 10, best game ever. Minimal flaws, although there are some substantial flaws, and each level being a 3 minute or less short, and seeing,
that'd be cool. Yeah
what I
out
could,
of interest, just out of interest, what, you said the like you implied that like the ratio between people, the shorts numbers and the long form number, what's the ratio between the numbers?
Okay, so a short on the Game of Thrones podcast, Ours Is the Theory, will generally get 1,000 watches, whereas a podcast will get anywhere between, I don't know, 10 to 30.
Oh, because it's huge.
It's huge.
I assume you do multiple shorts for each.
Yeah. Well, I've only done it for the last week, but it's like, you know, we've had comments, we've had likes, you know, we had, and again, I don't want to use that as a metric, but it is like, it's not just that it's getting thrown up. It seems like it's not just getting thrown up in an algorithm. It obviously is getting thrown up in an algorithm.
Yeah.
But it does. It does seem like there's a bit of engagement behind the numbers as well, which is kind of interesting. Mm. But then again, I go back and look at them. I go, yeah, that's kind of a nice little short video. Actually, yeah. You know, like,
yeah. I mean, you can always take out, you know, but you know, somebody put their point succinctly. Mm. But because there are some things, you know, I say I only like long form stuff, but there are certain things where I just want, you know, give me the bullet points, give me that. Like when I'm looking at the news,
yeah,
I don't really read the news. I just look at the headlines, and you know, maybe once a month something will interest me enough to actually read the article. So yeah, you know, some people want the summary for whatever reasons, whether it's just, you know, bus stop, whatever, you know, and some people want the long form thing, and having both is ideal.
Yeah. I mean, I think in particular, doing this like little self-hosted thing with the Freebooters website and all that has definitely made me realize that there is an obvious space for like long form podcasts. I listen to them when I have to like travel on a bus or something, and just being able to, you know, listen to something that isn't music, you know, for a period of time is, you know, really not too bad. Or have something on in the background as I'm doing something else like that. Mm. I think the technical term is it's like second screen content or something like that, they call it. Like that I really like as well. And I think that because like with podcasts, traditionally they're audio only, it is to me, it's a successful strike against the big tech monopolistic, you know, you could just give someone a sound file. You can send it in, you know, like WhatsApp or something, or you can just put it on a website, or, you know, it's it to me. The podcast.
Yeah, I mean, most of the short form videos I see are TikTok videos on Fedi or TikTok videos on Instagram that somebody links me. You know, it's never or it's rarely on the original source. Yeah, they are more of a shared thing. Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, if you're just doing short videos, you could also just host them on your site.
Yes, that was also something that I was. Yeah, I mean, I mean, given
as well as, you know, everywhere else or whatever. I'm not saying only on your site. But, you know.
I keep a stack of them in the archive. But then I could do a clock for videos. I've got short form
video. Yeah, unfederated short form video.
Yeah, RSS short form video type.
And I
could do that. I mean, if I made it podcast ready. You could play it in podcast apps through an RSS because AntennaPod does support video.
Yeah.
So doing that and like less, you know, like, because interestingly enough, you don't know this yet. I've recorded the videos on this podcast vertically.
Oh my fucking Lord. What?
Yes. So
is it slimming?
Yes. Very good, slimming. Good. But partly because I might want to take some shorts out of this, but also because if you're listening to a podcast now, this is not going to be the case with Freebooters, but what's the chances you'll be listening it onto a phone rather than a large device?
Yeah.
I'm surprised more long form content doesn't come on first. I suppose because if you're holding it like this 3 hours, you know.
Yeah.
But it's
I want to pull up the David Lynch clip where he's just he rails for about 5 minutes, but you can't watch a fucking movie on a phone.
I mean, I don't think I could, although I did watch a couple of episodes of Prison Break.
He's saying it's a fundamentally different experience, that if you watch a film on a phone, you haven't watched that film. That's what he thinks. I disagree with it, but I love David Lynch, and you know, it's an interesting take.
I think, I mean, my dad tells me when he first saw the Star Wars, he saw it on a 6-inch black and white television.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, that's
most of my film watching for most of my life was on a 14-inch portable with a shitty signal.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, it's just sort of some sort of thoughts I've been working out, really, like, you know, because I don't watch short form content that much. But to be honest, going back and watching old stuff I made in short form is kind of nice because it's I don't want to necessarily.
Yeah, when I occasionally watch, the little short clips that you did in the past, it's like it because it reminds you of the whole.
Yes.
It brings back the whole without having to rewatch the whole.
Yeah. I mean, like, so I did the Morrowind shorts that we did.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I love those. Those, in my opinion, are some of the best videos.
They're really fun. They are really fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't have a solid home in a way. Like, I've put them up on the new loops thing that I've set up, but I don't think they exist on YouTube at the moment.
And also, there's no Oblivion short you've done. How curious if it's such a great game.
Well, it's not a multiplayer game, is it? but then, of course, you can watch the full thing as well. That's on PeerTube and also in my video archive, which, you know. So
another thing that we keep saying we should get back to multiplayer Morrowind.
Absolutely. We got so much on the list as well, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's just the thoughts I had on it. And one thing, sometimes I entertain the idea of a Square video, which works in both short and long form, like as the absolute bastardization. But I don't know if that's actually, I don't know whether or not it's worth leaning one to the other, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I just like Square video aesthetically. I just like that as a format. I think it's a nice, comfortable, you know. It's weird, like with my TV channel thing, when an old show comes on that's 4:3, which is, you know, give or take Square, there's something more, it's just easier to watch. I think just the less information is enough information, and you just feel less tired. It's less tiring to watch. There's just something nicer about it.
I think,
that's mostly aesthetic.
But 4:3 is an entirely different beast to me again.
Really? I think of 4:3 as give or take Square.
I think 4:3 is the superior ratio for computer monitors, if I'm honest. If I was to, it might even be 3:4, or like 1:4:3, 1:3:4, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The L-shaped monitor, because, you know.
I mean, I'd just go Square. If I was in charge of the world, I'd just make all monitors a square. Films should be square. Not always. There's reasons to go more wide, and there's reasons to go.
Yeah, whatever, but you'd need a wider monitor, wouldn't you?
Well, no, just you're black barring something. So, you know, it's just where the black bars are, isn't it? If you're on a wide screen, 4:3 is black barred for me. If you're on 4:3, then 16:9 is black barred or anything wider.
Fine. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're making a thing for a specific screen in mind, it would make no sense to black bars it, right?
What do you mean?
Well, if I was making a film for television, I'd make it 16:9. Why else? What else? If I make it square, it's not filling the screen.
That's fine. That just becomes not the screen for the purposes of watching that.
In some films, they do black bars for, like, effect.
Yeah,
which is,
well, I mean, there's lots of movies are wider than 16:9, so you get the black bars, and old TV shows are 4:3, so you get the black bars down the side, you know.
Yeah, but the old TV shows are black bars because TVs used to be that way.
Modern films are wider than 16:9 because they're still prioritizing cinema, where you can do whatever you want. Even on a cinema screen, you're essentially black barsing something. You know, there's part of the screen that is unused.
Yeah,
with some films. So most films, they edit down to the aspect ratio they want.
Mm.
With some films, they used to send out, like, or give the specs for, I can't remember the term for it, like a thing they put in the gate, like a mask they would put in the gate and then project through it. So the film would be bigger than what you see in some cases. And I think in the case of Odyssey, again, not a Nolan fan, but the whole thing shot in IMAX, which is 4:3, I think.
Mm.
But obviously there aren't many IMAX cinemas where you can see the whole thing in 4:3. So there are different edits at different levels of cropping.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a chore to edit, because it's probably largely the same except for that one scene where you don't want to cut top stars out.
He's had to shoot it so that everything's in the middle of the frame vertically. Actually, somebody mentioned about, you know, have you heard of the film Obsession?
No.
Okay, it's the most recent, like, really popular horror film that's popular with, like, the kids. And everything in that film is right in center of frame.
Because
it's a young director. He knows about TikTok. You can very easily make TikTok videos out of it. And that's how it got shared. And that's how it got popular. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I... I don't see. That's the thing with the vertical videos is that I put out. I don't know where their home should be. I guess YouTube Shorts, because
I think you worry about that too much.
I do. Yeah.
I think fundamentally, we're against things like YouTube. We're pro things like Reels and hosting it on your own site.
Mm.
But I do. I come down to, like, if you're not where the users are, it's gestural. It can be philosophically coherent and fully meant, but it's you're just, there are people there who want to watch your stuff, and you're making it hard.
Yeah,
you're also not engaging with the system you don't like. I'm not saying it's illegitimate, but it is. There's something that's maybe a little bit performative, maybe a little bit artificial, I think.
Well, with Shorts,
like, the stuff we do, like our Space Virgins, would get 10 times as many views on YouTube, right?
I don't know, actually. Like you say, it's the fact that we're a Fedi, like Fedi is our home on, particularly with Space Virgins. I think, I don't know how many views it'd get on YouTube, to be honest.
I think it'd easily get 10 times as many, but, you know, video, you know, roughly video per video.
Well, that'd be a couple.
Some of those Space Virgins are barely into double digits.
Yeah.
It's really up and down, actually. It's very varied. I think titles and thumbnails probably matter as much as, you know,
YouTubers
they matter. But yeah, I think they'd easily get 10 times as many on YouTube. And a little bit of me cares, just not because we always say we don't care about the numbers. It's just, if somebody would enjoy it, I want them to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's such a fucking niche thing to begin with. Like the fraction of the public that's going to enjoy what we do on
Facebook. So we're niching ourselves out of existence.
If we're niching ourselves down to single digits, like at a point, it's like, what is the point? Is it just because we enjoy making them? And I do, but you know what I mean?
Well, see, that's the thing, right? So, I mean, the freebooters, as far as I'm aware, is going to be, you know, like, its core home in terms of its essence, its ideology, all that kind of stuff is on the website. Like,
yeah,
it, you know, because being audio, primarily audio, it means that it can be shared around. It's small, it's portable, it's not at the mercy of big tech and data centers. I really like that. However, then it makes sense to me that stuff like, well, people like Shorts, and a lot of people like Shorts that don't necessarily like podcasts. And a lot can be said in 3 minutes. And when you make a bunch of Shorts also, because the thing about Shorts that interests me is that it was the reason TikTok basically overshot YouTube in the community video making world, right? If you wanted to make a little home video or whatever to share with people, it used to be YouTube. And then TikTok came out of nowhere. And then that's, you know, and YouTube kind of pivoted a lot more to like television-y sort of stuff. It does have a Shorts offering. It's trying to do live stream, but that is quite small compared to Twitch. Mm. So, like, YouTube has been losing ground on a lot of areas. And one of those areas, of course, is TikTok. And the thing is with the short, the reason it seems like is that YouTube was always, like, king of the market, because what other upstart company could afford to host limitless video?
Yeah, which, I mean, they didn't even in the beginning, did they?
But not in the beginning.
As you said earlier, there's a limit.
And
it's also, it's just the wrong way of thinking about everything. Why? Like, because YouTube is still absolutely the king of, you know, long-form wide videos. Like,
yes,
they never lost that. They never lost ground on that. It's just that somebody, some other place is doing something else. Why do you have to do everything? Just let them do that. Do your thing.
Yeah. And but the thing is, with Shorts,
I can just quickly say, in terms of the ethics of all this, I think I'm leaning towards, like you say, I think your own website should be the home of everything, and after that, it should be shared. And then, you know, it comes back to like the FOSS idea; it should be shared as broadly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So long as the license is right, so long as all this stuff is CC0 or whatever, put it up on YouTube, put it on TikTok, put it on, you know, just have it everywhere.
Have it everywhere.
And, you know, part of the argument, and this can be a little bit spurious, but, you know, ideally it would draw people to the more ethical things eventually.
That would be the idea, but also we get to make it on our terms and we get to throw it out there for the world. But that is also why I think Shorts are kind of interesting, because a short, it depends vastly on what the short is actually of, determines the file size, but they're very small files by comparison, like 20, 30, 40 megabytes.
Yeah, even at the worst, they could be, yeah.
And, okay, so you could do the super higher resolution ones. Who gives a fuck about that when it's just talking?
Yeah.
You can throw those around. I can keep a stack of them, and they will always be my little stack, you know, in my archive.
Yeah,
that's
you
fine.
You can move them wherever you want, yeah.
I can move them. I can
like
stick
them. You know, if YouTube gets censorious or super locked down, like, and, you know, it's the problem is when people depend on a particular corporate platform for, you know, what they do culturally or their living or whatever, that's dangerous.
Yeah,
but if you're just spreading your wild oats all over the internet space, then, you know, it doesn't matter.
That's how Alex Jones kept about, innit? They tried to ban him off a few things, but he kept telling the truth, didn't he? Yeah. You know? Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's kind of, yeah, like, that's a little bit where sort of my head sort of drifts towards a little bit is like, and I don't know,
I think when you know, last time you were thinking about this stuff and you semi-deleted your YouTube stuff, I would say just don't get attached to the platform. Don't think about the platform too much. Just like, they're on there, you know, you don't owe them anything, you know, nothing is owed in either direction. It's just another hard drive fundamentally.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, that's because I think when I mothballed my account on YouTube,
because you were invested in it was the problem, I think.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it had a hold over you.
Yes, and we did say that if I ever fancied, like, you know, doing stuff on big tech platforms again, it would be new. It'd be a different place, new account. Yeah. So yeah, maybe I might, because I've got some days off now. So maybe when I got a few moments, because the thing is, as well, is like I'm trying out Loops, but the thing is with Loops is it suffers the traditional problem of not having that much content on. One thing I will say that I do quite like about it. And again, it's the same thing that is with all Loop's platforms, Shorts platforms, is it will just give you a recommendation and another recommendation and another recommendation. That's all right. Like, I've watched a few videos I like on Loop's, probably more than PeerTube, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because it'll throw something like, here's some journal cycling videos.
Hamish in the past has made the argument that there is, you know, there's plenty of content on PeerTube, but it so depends what you're interested in.
And like discoverability, the kind of stuff, though.
And discoverability. The kind of stuff I watch on YouTube, for the most part, you know, the political discussions by top-tier academics in the field and, you know, physics stuff of a similar nature, that isn't on PeerTube. It just isn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, just in terms of just, like, you know, I assume YouTube has billions more videos than the entirety of
trillions, PeerTube. Trillions, I would guess.
Probably trillions, yeah. So just, you know, just... Unless you're into the particular niches that PeerTube is strong on, which is the things that, you know, the Fediverse is strong, you know, like 3D printing, you know, maker stuff, like, sure. Yeah, you're probably very well catered for. Even then, if you watch a lot of that stuff, you're probably going outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, for anything other than that, it's not there.
But I do think that Loops is... there's definitely a lack of content on Loops, but the presentation of that format...
I think you're expecting it to fill up less time, so the less is slightly less of a problem, maybe?
Yes, but also it just throws you something. You like it, you move on. You like it, you watch it, you don't... I think that just method of throwing stuff at you kind of works. Like, I think it works better.
Long form, I hate it. When, you know, sometimes if you're not logged into YouTube and it defaults to the autoplay, the next recommended thing, I hate that. Well, we don't want that. But on short form, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I don't have it on autoplay. I just, like, scroll down, boom, scroll down. Sorry for people at home, I've just played a Shorts video, and it was very loud. I'm going to mute it, because this one... Oh, this is just someone dancing. But, okay, it has entertained me for 5 seconds. It's not surprising to know that, like, Loops needs more content, but then again, maybe that's where I come in, you know.
And it being short form and it being easier to upload stuff and quicker, and, you know, maybe it'll fill up quicker.
Yeah, it is. It, like, because the thing is, it's exactly what you'd expect it to be. Like, it's got the same kind of TikTok-y look, TikTok but on the Fedi, and I don't know. Maybe like the thing is, you know, you can have the platform, but it's the investment needs to come from people that make the videos.
Are you on an instance right now? Can you link me to one? I don't think I've ever actually looked at Loops.
Oh, loops.video is the instance I'm on. So this, yeah. It's, but yeah, yeah, so it's...
What you expect it, isn't it?
Exactly what you'd expect it to be, yeah. In terms of how it works, it works.
I do think there's something, it's kind of touched on this earlier, I think there's something healthier in the TikTok, whatever you want to call it, environment, mm-hmm. where copyright seems to be completely disrespected.
Yes.
Like if somebody likes something on one platform, they'll just upload it to another platform. Like it, yeah. ownership, all of that is out the fucking window. Yeah. And in a way that I like, I'm in favor of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easier to say, like, because yeah, I think on TikTok, is there not like a, you can actually download a TikTok video?
Oh, can you? Yeah, I don't know.
It might be a setting that the video owner needs to apply or something.
But right.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, but the thing is, of course, TikTok really capitalized that early on because it's the TikTok watermark on all the videos. So yeah. when it was getting
Which
posted up,
well, you can always, it's that's good for the person making it as well. That yeah. that neuters the idea that, you know, sharing yeah. things is
yeah
bad. Excuse me.
Mm. See, I always thought if I wanted, yeah, yeah. See, it's, I feel a bit like I'm a bit worried. Not worried. I'm a bit conscious of am I being a bit of a dinosaur by. Like lovingly wanting to stick to the old 16:9 let's play style of video that no one else really cares to watch that has been done, when I can modify that to a short, do it the way I like, and do it the way that people want to watch. Like,
well,
is
I don't
that...
think you dinosaur. You seem to enjoy the short form. And
I like the refining of it.
Yeah, right. yeah.
Also,
I fundamentally I don't like it. I like my wide long.
See, the thing is, I'm not a watcher of shorts. This is the thing that I find a bit odd.
Yeah, right. You like making them.
I like making them. I like watching my own. I feel a great sense of pride when I've managed yeah. to take something that's quite long and take the beats boil of it and down. Put it boil it down.
Yeah.
So I get a great, yeah. you know, and there are shorts I like. I find them addictive, but not necessarily that I like them, which might say something.
You know what? I in my short dalliance with TikTok, when I tried it out for a week mm. or so, it did get me to one podcast. You know, they did shorts mm. and I ended up watching the full podcast. So that works for sure, mm. even on me who used it for a few days.
Yeah. But if we're saying something good in 3 minutes, I mean, the podcast is just, you know, they don't even have to come to the podcast. Like if...
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
But, yeah. I put a little title. See, the thing is, I put a little title card at the end of the Game of Thrones stuff that I do, partly because, you know, they loop. And
yeah.
I think it would be a little bit disjointing when it starts again straight after. Mm. So a little end card.
When it's conversation. And
mm. yeah.
yeah. That's cool.
But it's one of those things that I have an interesting relationship with shorts because they're not something that I like to watch. They are something I like to make, and they're something that is undeniably mainstream in how people consume content. Mm. And I'm like, I'm sure there are like video directors that are dogmatically pro black and white. It's like, no, people don't really want to watch black and white. It's like, no, why did we ever move away from black and white? I loved, you know. Yeah, so maybe, yeah. I don't know. It's this adaptability thing that I've got. Is like, how much should we adapt to the changing world, and how much should we be dinosaurs?
I think if you, and this is more pertinent than like political stuff. But you know, if you're saying something, you go where the people are. Saying it, choosing to say something to fewer people is never smart or sensible or productive. You know,
yeah.
like go where the people.
Yeah. Well, what I'm working on at the moment is. So, you know, I got my blog on chrisware.wales where it's Blop. And then I've got also like, what else I got? I got podcasts and I've got a master feed of all the stuff that I do. And I'm thinking maybe I should put the master feed of everything I do on the front page and then a blog as the blog behind it in like a subdirectory or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then so yeah. Everything I do, including the blog, will come up in this RSS feed aggregate. And then I need to work on, I don't know, like pagination or presentation a little bit more on that, which I'll probably do over the next few days. But then also, like Loops Video does have an RSS feed, but it's an Atom feed. So now I've got to work out how to convert an Atom feed into RSS, which should be easy,
similar.
Right? Yeah, they've got tags. So
yeah, no, it's still XML. Yeah, I think a lot of feeds that call themselves RSS. They are often Atom, I think. I think people mix them up sometimes. I might be wrong.
Or is there an overlapping standard?
Yeah, they're super similar, yeah.
So, well, it doesn't work at the moment because I did try and put Chris Vision, which is the Loops channel, which is a name I set like 2 years ago. And I tried to sign up to it last night. I was like, you know, you've already got an email address with us. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know, Chris Vision. I wanted something, because the thing is in the Fedi is it only shows you the first part of your handle. So if I'm like Chris Ware for everything, you're not going to know the difference between Chris Ware videos and Chris Ware Mastodon. Chris Vision, that's. So yeah, I need to work out how to feed in the Atom thing, which using XML Starlet, I'm assuming is going to be quite trivial, right?
We are getting to that point where we're getting into the techie minutiae, shall we?
Yep, let's, okay. Good luck, and I hope you enjoyed this 3-hour short. All right, toodaloo, everybody.